Touch me in my special place.
Thanks for that.
Jono, there's been a lot of talk recently about your health. So before we start the show, maybe you could describe to the users the welts and rashes on your reproductive organs so they understand your reasons for your staying here.
Jono, you've got the cancer, haven't you?
I have not got the cancer.
He's got the HIV.
Hang on, your mic's not working.
Oh, that's good.
Let me waggle it.
Welcome to Love Freak.
There we go.
Have you got galloping knob rot?
I've got neither knob rot nor galloping knob rot.
I'm fine. There's no health problem.
Just the cancer, then.
I haven't got the cancer either. So you just hate turkey, right?
It's that Byrne and Matthew Singh. Anyway, welcome to season 4, episode 14 of Luck Radio.
I just want to be absolutely fucking clear today. Right? There's nothing cancer related, okay?
Okay, so what is the health problem then, Jono?
The health problem is a non-serious, non-life-threatening issue.
No problem.
The men that I could not travel.
How come you've lost a stone without knowing what...
That's the wasting disease.
Jono, you don't need to be embarrassed about your impotence. It's a common problem among men.
Lots of men have it. I'm having
you might have guessed, we've got a studio guest.
Yeah. Welcome to Lug Radio. And in the studio we've got Christine Schaller, legend from Fluendo, who's gonna get a fucking kicking when this segment's
finished. Yes, he is. Absolutely. So
why don't we introduce ourselves?
Matthew Ravel.
He's Matthew Ravel. Who are you?
I'm not Matthew Ravel. I'm Adrian Bradshaw.
Let's not do that one again. I'm not doing that again.
Carry on. I'm Hate Bradshaw. Who are you?
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm Jono Bacon.
And I'm Christian Schaller.
Hey!
And on the show today, talking about...
Christian Schaller.
We will be talking about Christian Schaller.
Yeah. Other unices apart from Linux.
We're going to argue about free ones.
And closed source ones. And SCO and...
Opera incorporating Ogthio and Og Vorbis directly into the browser.
We talk about that for quite a while.
We're going to talk to Christian about some of the work that's going on at Fluendo and GStreamer and things like that. And of course, we're going to talk about whether the GNOME project needs some more direction and leadership to compete with a new fancy desktop and
maybe
with KDE4.
Well, maybe we should just call KDE4.
Yeah. Who knows?
And then emails.
And we're going to shout at you all to submit papers for Lug Radio Live.
Yeah, so it's a long
show. Like I mentioned, yeah.
Hey, it is a very long show.
It's a long show. But the last show was shorter, so we feel like, you know, we didn't want to, you know, fuck you guys over, so we provided value for money. Not just rambling on for ages. None of that.
Hey, Matt's
put his specs on. That means that he's serious about the show.
It means I'm ready to go home.
Matt also just loves orange. Susan pointed out to me the other night that apparently Matt, either always wears orange or hangs around people who wear orange. Why is this, Matt?
I've got one orange t-shirt. I mean...
But you hang around people with orange.
No, I mean, at SkyCon I was wearing stripes, as I've said previously. I had vertical stripes and horizontal stripes.
Have you been tangoed?
No.
Shall I just check his underpants?
Yeah, I was wearing...
What were you checking them for?
I was wearing orange underwear yesterday. I was sort of like, not remembering it was today or yesterday, because that would be a coincidence.
So you were wearing orange underwear yesterday, you had to check in case you still had them on today. Lovely.
That's fucking delightful. Ladies form a queue. So what kind of underwear preference do you have, Mr. Schaller?
Actually, since this is like a very sexy show, I decided to go without underwear today.
Yay! Really?
So you're just swinging free in the wind.
So we've got Christian Commando Kalaga Schaller.
Any relation to German poo commander?
We all like the Linux desktop. Well, not mine, like the Windows desktop.
Fuck off.
Deny it, go on.
I have Linux only at home, so fuck you.
Well done.
Really?
I have Linux at home and at work.
Likewise.
That's because you care so much about free and open source development.
We're not having the Ubuntu argument again.
Which is clearly why you weren't at Fosdem.
You need to talk to him about Launchpad.
Anyway, moving back to the point here, we all got the Linux desktop. Something that came up on the Lug Radio forums was someone whining...
Sorry, on the what?
You guys suck!
The Lug Radio forums, someone going, oh, but what about BSD? Everyone just talks about the Linux desktop. And it occurred to me that you've got all the BSDs, and you've got Open Solaris.
Yep.
And we talk about the Linux desktop, and should we be talking about the free software desktop? But the point is, does anyone give a shit? Does anyone fucking care about Open Solaris? It's about NetBSD and OpenBSD and FreeBSD and Dragonfly BSD and BSD32 and BSDi and 386BSD and fucking whatever else.
Oh, you finished, right? Okay. Well, at Fosdem, there was a great deal of interest in Open Solaris. That's Fosdem.
Right.
there's a great deal of interest in Open Solaris, but
was there a lot of interest in Open Solaris from people who weren't already Open Solaris before?
There really was, yeah. Right. No, there really was.
Define a great lot of interest in Open Solaris. Was that three people
milling
around
the stand?
Well,
there was a stand and there were a lot of people actually looking at the desktop that was on display there, and our friend Paddy Finch was there.
Well, it's a good bloke. Yeah.
But end up there. We have no more comedy accents on
no,
the show.
No, we won't. Right. But you mentioned the BSD desktop. I mean, does that exist? Because when you say BSD,
yeah,
I
you
always
run GNOME on BSD.
I always think of BSD as a server thing. I mean, I know that Apple basically nicked it and then made it into Mac OS X, but
I think Apple may contest that.
I don't think Apple would contest it. They just say we were allowed to. That's what the BSD license is.
But does anybody use BSD as a desktop? Is the question I'm asking.
Well, at least the guy on the Lug Radio forums who mentioned it was a BSD person.
So the question is, does anybody care about free Unices on the desktop
on the desktop specifically, does anyone care about free Unices that aren't Linux? Should we be talking about the free desktop or the open desktop or the Unix desktop rather than talking about the Linux desktop?
I think we should.
We'll say, is it you or the Linux desktop? But
yes, then, I think we should.
Then we're automatically excluding the Open Solaris. I mean,
at the end of the day, we all support free desktops and free operating systems, and yeah, we should, but I suppose there's so many people using Linux that it's kind of become the de facto mainstay. But I think
you love free desktops, don't you? What's that one over there?
Oh, shut up.
And what do you work in every day at work? Oh, yeah, that's right. Non-free software.
Another important point, I guess, is that...
Into your mic, shall I? Into your mic!
Sorry! But most new developments for the desktop happens first on Linux. Like, you know, HAL was an important step for the Linux desktop, and that was Linux only. Today you also have FreeBSD and Solaris support, I think, or at least early stages of it. But so in some sense, like a show like you guys are doing, when you're covering the bleeding edge, it tends to be Linux only, because that's where the new stuff really happens most of the time.
Why is it developed for the GNOME desktop, and people like Open Solaris can still use it?
Well, it depends on your point. I mean, application software is developed for GNOME. Right. So, to be honest with you, if you build a GNOME application, you'll run quite happy on Open Solaris. Just the same way. But if you're doing anything semi-low level, GNOME Power Manager, for example, that talks to HAL. Yep. So anything that's vaguely low level, it tends to talk to SysFS and things like that, and stuff like that doesn't exist on Solaris.
Right.
So, but, I mean, with the possibility of Open Solaris adopting GPL3, and...
Version 3!
I mean, do you think there's a chance that the FSF could kind of think, well, the herd isn't really working out, we'll just take Open Solaris, because they are kind of, Open Solaris are now sponsoring the FSF and becoming a member of it.
I don't know, it's like any free software project thinking, well, that one's probably going to be more likely to succeed. People still carry on. Well, I think the herd will always be there.
Well, I mean,
and it's always going to be lagging behind, which is a shame, but...
The point about success is an interesting one, because we spent the last 10, 15 years teaching the world what the word Linux means.
Yep.
And now, should we stop talking about Linux in order to include Open Solaris, BSDs, whatever? Or should we continue talking about Linux because it's got name recognition, it's got the brand?
Definitely.
But if you talk about Linux,
I think
then you're not talking about Open Solaris.
Yeah, you're not. But there's always going to be...
So you think we should talk about Linux then?
I'd say that...
So I'd say the opposite.
I'm biased here because I'm a Linux user.
Okay.
I used to use BSD, but I use Linux now. And the thing is that Linux is growing, and there is brand there, and that brand does help grow Linux even further. But I think the important thing is not necessarily having to include everyone in the discussions, but always making sure that we don't exclude them from the discussions. So I think, like, as long as people can always make use of, and we always remember that there's going to be the BSDs and things like that in the world, but fundamentally they're more fringe kind of operating systems. And I think what we shouldn't be doing is we shouldn't be...
Yeah, that's hugely dismissive, isn't it?
I'd say it's perfectly fine. They are fringe operating systems. I mean, the main free software operating system today...
You should talk about the free desktop rather than...
Well,
it depends who you're talking to, surely.
The thing that I think is interesting, because if you look at some distributions, take Linspire, for example, they're quite happy to include non-free software in their desktop, but it's still a Linux desktop.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the free desktop, it would exclude Linspire, but include Solaris, Open Solaris.
Yeah.
So should we be talking about a free desktop? For people who think that non-free software is fine, then whatever, you know, we talk about the Linux desktop, not a problem.
Hang on a second.
But for people who've got freedom as a core goal of the thing, should we be talking about the free desktop rather than the Linux desktop?
If we're talking about the free desktop, then you can't talk about Solaris as packaged by Sun.
Open Solaris.
No, but what I'm saying is there isn't an Open Solaris desktop. There's NextCenter, there's Solaris Express, there's various different people.
It's as though you were there, Matt.
Huh?
It's as though you were there.
But
there's no Linux desktop either. There's Debian and Ubuntu and Fedora.
No, but what I'm saying is
Linux is a kernel, same as Open Solaris.
There are free desktops that feature a Linux kernel, but I don't think there are free desktops that feature an OpenSolaris kernel.
NextEnt is free, as far as I'm aware.
The thing, well, it's as free as Ubuntu is.
No, NextEnt is Debian, not Ubuntu. As I understand it, no, although I might be wrong about
it's
that.
It's Ubuntu.
Is it? I thought it was...
Yeah. It's even brown.
Oh, okay.
We should also not forget that there are differences between the kernels. I mean, part of the reason why I think Linux has been so successful, certainly part of the reason why I've kept using Linux, is because, like Christian says, the cool shit happens that it seems, I mean, this is a very generic statement, but the cool shit happens there first. I'm sure that the BSD guys are going to mail in and say, no, we've had this cool stuff happen here. But in general, the kind of stuff for desktop Linux tends to happen in Linux first.
I broadly agree with you. I mean, Solaris has got, Solaris does cool stuff.
Very good point,
for the server.
I'm not including server here at all.
BSD
just for desktop.
Do the way cooler stuff.
And Solaris do a lot of cool stuff for servers. I mean, and for developers, things like D-Trace, which is a Solaris thing, which is brilliant.
Memory randomization.
So that's all stuff's cool for servers.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Do you think that cool stuff happens on Linux because it's inherently easier to do that kind of thing on Linux, or just because there's more Linux developers?
I'm sure it's latter.
It's got a critical mass.
Yeah, it's got critical mass.
And that's the point, really, I think, isn't it? Do we talk about the Linux desktop because it's got the critical mass and the name recognition and
well,
stuff?
Well, my view is that at the moment, there's
use
no point in...
Sorry, cheap gag.
Fucking use Ubuntu. Fuck off.
I know, use Ubuntu, I agree.
Right, so... I think we've got a hard enough time at the moment pushing the idea of freedom and pushing the idea of an alternative desktop to Windows or Mac anyway.
Yeah.
So the fact that Linux has some kind of recognition and has some mass behind it is something we've got to work with. And if one day OpenSolaris turns out to be the kernel that we're all using, we'll deal with the problem then anyway, because people will probably by that stage be thinking of individual brands to do with distributions. Like they'll be thinking, I use Fedora, my dad uses Ubuntu, something like that. So I don't see that there's any point in worrying, oh, should we call it the free desktop? Because that has its own problems with it anyway.
I mean, bringing it on to branding a little bit, I remember when I was part of KDE, I remember thinking to myself, it seems a bit nuts that we talk about the free operating system being described as Linux or BSD or whatever. It seemed to me, when I was part of KDE, in my head, that we should be referring to KDE or GNOME or whatever, because then it completely gets rid of the whole kernel level. So, because no one really cares about kernels. People care about what they're interacting with.
Yeah.
And I remember pushing this when I was part of KDE, and I think other people had similar ideas. And I know there was a talk at LCA about a similar thing with GNOME. But at the end of the day, people still keep calling it Linux, and people still... And rightly or wrongly, I mean, you know, GNU/Linux, that's a whole extra debate, but... People, you know, there's that brand thing, and it's technically incorrect because it is just a kernel.
I disagree. I think you should talk about the open desktop like Linux, and I think that's the way you should refer to it. You need to be
inclusive.
That's
just cumbersome, though.
That's like saying I enjoy driving automobiles.
Yeah, I mean,
instead of saying I like driving my fucking Audi A7 or whatever the hell it is that you've got.
It's maybe not my job to point out that, I mean, your show is called Lug Radio, not Sug Radio for Solaris, or Bug Radio for BSD.
we're completely wrong because we've got nothing to do with Linux user groups.
Yeah.
We are a group of Linux users.
Yeah.
So coolest lug ever.
Screw you, Popey. But,
no one else can join our lug.
Well, Shala here is a visiting guest from Bath.
It's only because it's going to give us blowies at the end of the night.
Oh, right. Is that like George? A ice cream?
But I guess on the topic of other unities.
Udder? Like for cows?
Well, udder. Udder.
Yeah?
Yes.
You're not changing it at all. Sorry, carry on. Other units.
Why don't you talk in your second language, Johnny?
Yeah.
When we're looking at what we're going to try to support with our codecs, we did actually and then decide trying to support Solaris because it seemed to actually be a significant community out there. Well, we sort of felt that for the BSDs, unfortunately, they're due to the division between them and also that, well, even FreeBSD, which I guess is the biggest one, didn't seem that big. So we sort of felt it wasn't worth the cost of trying to support that extra platform.
So would you say the reason for that is because Sun are primarily behind OpenSolaris and they've had like that ability to push it? Because it's interesting that OpenSolaris has just come out and then it's steamed ahead.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I mean, if you look at free Unix desktops, you've got Linux at the top in terms of popularity and name recognition or whatever. OpenSolaris has jumped in at number two. Above all the BSDs.
What? Don't forget to go.
Not free desktop.
but in
terms of free desktop, as soon as Sun opened Solaris, OpenSolaris became number two behind Linux. And the BSD still haven't got anywhere, which really annoys them.
But you know what Patrick Finch uses on his desktop, though?
Sorry, say that again?
Do you know what Patrick Finch uses on his desktop?
Windows.
Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Because he loves OpenSolaris, but you know, NextCenter isn't quite ready for everything he wants to do with it.
He's aware that it's not ready yet, absolutely.
Patrick Finch being... next year he'll be running OpenSolaris, though.
Probably, yeah. But
he'll be running OpenSolaris just as soon as he can.
It's so close to being ready.
I think his machine is actually triple boot.
Right, yes, you're right.
Ubuntu, OpenSolaris, and Windows, I think, is the
other
one.
You see, I don't know if I agree.
Last one?
I don't know if I agree, because, he could say... It's nearly ready, so therefore it's all right to run a different operating system. I am pleased it's using Ubuntu, but in many ways you should be eating your own fucking dog food, really.
Yeah.
Well, let's not shoo him right now something that me and Ack think is true, and he's not here to defend himself.
Oh yeah, I mean, making the assumption that he is running Ubuntu.
Are you running Bleeding Edge Feisty?
On one of my machines I am.
Is it the machine you actually use for work?
No.
There you go.
But it's a development machine. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I can understand him not using a
development snapshot.
No, believe me,
aren't we limiting ourselves, though, by just talking about Unities? I mean, what about...
Are there any free non-Unix
Haiku?
Free DOS!
Seriously, there's Reactos, which, obviously...
Reactos doesn't seem to have gone... Reactos is an NT4 clone that doesn't seem to go anywhere. Haiku is a BIOS clone, which doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
But,
FreeDOS is whatever it works.
But what I'm saying is...
Athos isn't free, is it?
Athos is a fucking wireless
Skyos, then. There's Athios, or Athios.
Athios, isn't it?
Maybe.
Every time I went to his website...
Skyos, then, or something. But my point is, are there other... You know, can we imagine that someone might decide that, in an aid style, that Unix is maybe a bit old-fashioned and they want to create something, you know, snazzy and new?
No doubt. As long as it's free.
I can't think
as long as it's free, you're still talking about Linux, is what you were saying earlier.
No, I'm not saying at all that you... I'm not saying... what I said earlier on is that I choose Linux. That's my operating system of choice.
That
right?
sounds like a fucking t-shirt slogan, doesn't it?
That wasn't the question,
no,
though, was it?
Listen,
we didn't ask what you were going to choose to run
your
desktop.
Hang on, let me make my point. I personally choose Linux, but I'm saying we shouldn't exclude the other ones, but naturally people are going to get behind a certain thing when it reaches critical mass. It happens with everything, and people make decisions. I mean, I relatively regularly try out lots of different operating systems, right? Yeah. And I always end up coming back...
I've tried Ubuntu, had Ubuntu, Feisty, and Kubuntu.
I always come back to using Linux.
And Linux.
You know, and I've changed...
What was the last non-Linux operating system you tried out?
BSD.
When?
FreeBSD, about 6 months ago.
How long did you try it for?
I played around with it for about a day.
Pretty extensive trial.
the point I'm making is that I'm not just fucking using Ubuntu because I work at Canonical. I'm using Linux. I've been using Linux for the last fucking 8 years. And the reason why I use that is because I choose Linux.
I didn't think this was a question about what we choose for our own desktops.
The point I'm making is that the reason why I'm saying I say push Linux is because that's my choice. I'd promote that. Yes, in a perfect world, we should say every free operating system and... Oh, and what I'm saying is that we should never exclude. In that case,
shouldn't distributors stop talking about the name of their distribution and start talking about Linux?
No, exactly.
From what you're saying, Linux has got the name recognition where Ubuntu or Fedora do not. So you shouldn't be talking about Ubuntu Linux, you should be talking about Linux. Surely that's a perfect counterexample. You talk about Ubuntu,
yes,
not about Linux.
And I think we should be talking about Linux.
Really?
Then do it! You're the community manager!
Here are two things, right?
I'm not fucking branding manager, am I?
Have you got a branding manager?
Yes.
Yes.
Christina Armstrong. Okay.
I actually did, like John, and tested FreeBSD out, I guess, around 6 months to something like that. And the reason I sort of didn't bother after a day was that after having gotten used to actually having like plug and play for almost everything on Linux, just getting back to the good old Linux 1.2 days where you had to like configure everything manually.
I tried Gentoo, but then I had to compile a kernel, so I was fucked.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you said all the stuff happens on Linux first. Mm. Everything else seems to be that far behind that, you know, I can't plug something in and have it just work. And that's the kind of a base level of stuff I expect these days.
Exactly.
I expect that when I put a CD in, I won't have to fucking mount it from the command line by sudoing first.
thing is,
you've really changed your tune, young man.
Well, no,
when I first
meant free
you
software,
at the lug, you were all like, oh, /mount -t, and
because that
using fucking mutt for your email.
Why don't you grab a user interface? That's because that's all we had.
To be fair to Ack, one thing that Ack's always said is that we should always work to do things the graphical way, and not have to fall back on old habits of, oh, it's alright, I can mount it on the command line.
I was there when he was using mutt.
Eh? Yeah, yeah, but the reason why he used it is because the graphical applications weren't right for him. beard.
It's no, it's true. They won't. I now use graphical mail.
Right.
Well, there is another factor here, I think. I mean,
we're only talking 2 years
all
ago.
All of us here in this room is getting quite old in some sense here, like compared to university students. So I think our patience with sitting, like spending the weekend, like I did with Sean Card working, is gone. They just want shit to work because they're tired of doing the same fucking shit they did 10 years ago.
I certainly have less time to go, oh, I need to edit this document, I'll spend 2 days pondering about it, etc. I mean, one of the reasons I use Matt is that I have to SSH in. And you can't SSH in and run Thunderbird, say. Unless you're prepared to export your entire X session, which was a lot more complicated when my broadband was very slow.
Digress.
I'm just trying to make the point. But so you think, John O'Bacon, we should be talking about the Linux desktop, everybody, whether you want to talk about something more specific than Linux, like a distribution, or less specific than Linux, like the free desktop.
Let me clarify this. I believe that we should all, as free software people, who are Linux people, I mean, it's different with other operating systems, but I believe that we should all, in a perfect world, we'd refer to Linux, but it doesn't work that way.
Think that it's too confusing to only refer to Linux because people will come across the names of the different distributions and things are different between distributions.
Yes.
So in the same way that you might refer to a dried noodle snack product, you expect a certain thing from cup noodle and you expect a certain thing from pot noodle. And I just don't see why we should only refer to Linux because people will get different things from Fedora that they will from Tiny Sofa.
That I think is a good point. If you say, how do you do this on Linux? The answer is dramatically different depending on whether you're on Fedora or Gentoo or Ubuntu.
They are different operating systems.
But I'd say that what I'm saying, we should refer to Linux. I think Linux should be in the trademark. Like, for example, with Ubuntu, it's referred to as Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. Fedora is referred to as Fedora.
Yeah.
But I'd say it should be Ubuntu Linux and Fedora Linux. I think we should differentiate between the different types of Linux, but we should always make sure Linux is in there.
Why wouldn't we also get into the /GNU/SunDidABit/AllMeAuntie
I
know you don't. So, but why put Linux in there if you're not going to put /GNU/blah?
Because Linux is a consistent brand that's associated with all of these distributions.
Yeah, but
it's just not up front in the branding guidelines.
I think in a similar way that you can talk about red wine and expect certain things from red wine, you can expect certain things from Linux, but you expect another set of things in addition to that from Ubuntu, just the same as you do from Ernest and Giuliano or whatever they're called fucking wine.
Yeah, but just because you consistently...
Are you hungry and thirsty, Matt?
Just because you...
many food and drink references.
Just because you consistently stick to one type of branding guideline, such as saying Linux, doesn't mean you've got to adhere to all of them. Doesn't mean you've got to fall in line with their fucking GNU/whatever theory. All I'm saying is that we should be, in my mind, we should be, because Linux is a definitive term that a lot of people refer to. Mm. I think that would be one thing that would be good for us to stick
what
to.
What do you think, man?
I think we should refer to the free desktop and then only get more specific if people ask. We should push the free desktop. And yes, I think we should care about free unices other than Linux.
Right.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
I think,
cool. Shallarino?
Well, to make another point to Jonas' comment, I think actually when if you look at Red Hat and Canonical and Novell, when they communicate sort of to the broader market, I mean, they do use the Linux trademark and the Linux name a lot. I mean, it's only when we sort of have our own little inbred community discussions that we just say Fedora or Ubuntu usually. So in a sense, the people you're talking to when you just say Ubuntu or Fedora usually is like the people who sleep, eat and drink Linux.
Yeah, people already know.
I disagree.
Particularly not with Ubuntu.
Certainly with Ubuntu and certainly with Fedora, they only refer to Fedora and only refer to Ubuntu from what I've seen.
And you're talking about not putting all your eggs...
People split hairs. I mean, they're like, oh, I'm running Ubuntu, fucking Feisty Fawn, Herd 3, Flight 2, version 3, Sub version 9. It's like, oh, I don't care. Yeah.
Only members of Borg do that. I mean, normal people don't.
Okay, so there was this interesting story I was pointed to the other day, where Håkon Wiemelie, the chief designer at Opera Software, were doing a presentation where he was showing off that they ever had a version where they integrated Ogg and Theora into the Opera browser, so that you can just put a video tag, put a video between it, and it will play inside your web page.
So all you need is the Opera web browser, and you're away.
And you've got a Theora player and a Vorbis player.
Yeah, so you can like put your video clips in, and it will be like having like flash video or whatever.
As long as they're not closed source clips.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I know is that the Firefox community has been talking about doing the same thing for a long while. So I guess both of them do this, there will be quite a lot of browsers out there that support this feature.
It's not a bad idea, I think.
It's good to see the formats getting promoted that little bit further, that, you know, they're getting more support, because Vorbis and Theora are good formats. Certainly for, I can imagine, like, for people who just want to stick some video on the internet, they don't necessarily want it to be massively high quality, because obviously it's not real high definition quality, but I think for a lot of people it's really, really suitable.
I see your point, but if you just want to stick some video on the internet, are you prepared to say, fine, no Internet Explorer users can see this? So, 75%.
Can you not download a codec for Windows Media Player? I don't know.
Yes, you can do. Right, you can play Og Theora and...
I wasn't aware whether you could or not.
Yeah, so you could get around it that way.
Right.
Absolutely, but then you're going to get the same pain that you get at the moment with QuickTime,
when we try and play any other codec.
Exactly. And it's shit, and we put up with it because we go, well, you know, we're the free desktop and we're happy. We understand the reasons that we can't play WMV10. But ordinary people are going to do, they're just going to go, fuck a bunch of your video sites, go somewhere else.
Interesting role reversal, because I'd say, well, fuck it, you know, they need to fucking support our formats.
I don't believe you.
If they want to see our porn, then they need to download them.
When we had this discussion about the Lug Radio Live videos, we said, should we just do them in Theora?
Yep.
And everybody's opinion was, if we do that, only some people will be out watching, we'll be cutting out loads of Windows.
Really?
And we all said,
I don't remember
we
that
shouldn't
discussion.
Do that.
I don't remember that either.
He's right, because look what we do with Lug Radio. We don't just release it in... We always release MP3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Why don't we stop releasing MP3s?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying that we don't do it, but you've just said, what about fucking Internet Explorer, you know, people? They're not going to be able to watch it, so there, you insinuated in your tone as if we should not fucking consider it.
Well, I guess an important point is that we do host streaming for a lot of companies at Flendo, and one thing we learned from these companies is that the thing they really, really want to avoid is having users download anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what they often do is that they make pages that try to detect what kind of system you have and try to present something. And currently that means that either try often to support both Windows Media and support Flash Video, because they know that you probably have either one. And I guess with this announcement, and if this also goes into Firefox, I think you might actually have suddenly a situation where there's so many pre-installed clients out there supporting Vorbis and Theora that they also will add this as a supported format.
Brilliant idea.
That'd be good if it happened, certainly.
That'd be a great idea.
It does mean that you have to keep, if you're a site posting videos, you now need to keep them in three formats, not just two.
Yes, but still.
Yeah, but you don't have to wait for anyone to download any player. You know, it's already there.
No, absolutely, I understand that, but a lot of, I mean, yes, if the point of your existence is to push video at people, then you're going to think, okay, I don't mind keeping each video on my server in three formats, Og Theora and Flash Video and Windows Media, and possibly QuickTime for Apple people. So, you know, so...
Possibly. I'd say people who do push out video would say, actually, we do fucking care. We don't fucking want to do that because of the amount of space required.
Well, that's exactly what it depends on your point of view. If it's more important to you to get your video on people's desktops with a minimum of effort, then you'll do it. If what you want to do is just make some videos available, you're going to pick one format. And that'll be whatever your video program gives.
And I suppose it depends on the amount of video. I mean,
we've talked before about how do you get open source codecs out there? How do you get them like included in Windows Media Player, and how do you push it? But this is a great way of pushing the format.
Mm.
The fact that it's built in to the web browser. It's going to make the web browser a bit bloated, I guess, but...
Christian, sorry. I was going to say, in the grand scheme of things, quite apart from it being free software, how good is the Theora codec?
The Theora codec currently has a quality that's comparable to, for instance, MPEG-2 video or Flash 7 video. So I mean, if it's very easy to get something that's comparable to what you have on YouTube, for instance, using Theora.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you look at a vast amount of content out there, it's not high quality content. So even if Theora isn't like comparable to Dirac or to H.264 in quality, it's more than good enough to compete with what's being used mostly out there today.
What people are actually looking at.
I think the big problem that we've got right now with Theora, and something that's in many ways fixable.
It's too orangey for crows.
Too orangey for crows.
That's the big problem.
The main problem that we've got is that it's a fucking nightmare getting anything into it. I mean, it's like, I've done a reasonable amount of video conversion, like when I did the Seraphidium videos, and I did the Lug Radio videos, and it was
some kind of open source video creator.
There's no really particularly easy way of converting videos into Theora.
I don't agree with you there.
It's a fucking pain in the arse.
It's not, because there's a program called FFmpeg2 Theora.
I think you find
it's anything that FFmpeg can read, which as far as I can tell is everything, you just do FFmpeg2 Theora, video file, output.org, and there you go, a Theora file.
I think what you meant to say, that there's this tool called GST Launch that you can use to convert videos.
Now, FFM Victor Theora works. Last time I fucked about with doing video with GStreamer, I got confused about having to split up the video and the audio and then part them back together, and I just fucking...
Did you not just use Pitivy?
Blew my own fucking head off and used FFM Victor Theora. I'm sorry, I tried to use GStreamer.
Well, use Pitivy then you don't need the command line tool.
Yeah. I tried using the GST Launch and the video was completely out of sync. I didn't try FFmpeg.
FFmpeg to Theora.
Chris Waddle.
FFmpeg to Theora.
Is this a command line thing?
Yes.
Well, I'm talking about making it easy for people to get... I'm not talking about... Yeah. You see, that's hard. It might do it, but that's still hard for people.
Okay. How would you convert something to a format that isn't Theora? MPEG to?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, well, the way I suspect most people do it is they'd use the bundled piece of software that comes with their graphics card,
right,
which will convert between the two.
Okay, so your point is not it's difficult to convert to Theora, it's that existing video applications don't support Theora as an output.
I'll give you an example as well. When I was converting between formats, I wanted to get the Seraphidian videos on YouTube, right? And to convert that, I had to use something called DVD Rip. Right, which is the most complicated piece of software ever constructed in a graphical interface. And it's like, that was
such a co-rip.
That was a real difficult process.
Yes.
And it seems like what we need something that's cross-platform, so Windows people are using it as well, that's just really simple, where you can just say, this is my file format, and it'll just fucking convert it. Because I had loads of sync issues with Theora. Maybe this was because it was a while back. Yeah. When we did Lug Radio Live the first year, I remember converting the video, and there was loads of out-of-sync problems, lip-sync problems.
Well, I mean, I think if you try to convert a video today with PTV, that shouldn't happen.
Right.
But I think if we have like 20 million Firefox installations out there at some point now with supporting Vorbis and Theora and Nog out of the box, I think that also might encourage
the
people
great thing about
like Final Cut Pro and whatever to start supporting it, because suddenly there actually is a market for these videos or something.
And the great thing about it is the Windows user will be included as well, not just the Linux user.
That's important.
So I understand. Oh, sorry, go on, Matt.
No.
Well, I was going to say, I understand your theory, but Firefox also supports a shitload of other stuff
like
that
SVG.
Other browsers don't support, like SVG, and that hasn't particularly bled out into the world. I mean, one of the things that annoys me about SVG, you can embed a bitmap in an SVG is a vector graphics.
That's the hamster, isn't it?
For people who don't know about it. No. vector graphics
is SVG, isn't it?
And you can use JavaScript to make it do things and so on, which is dead handy. And you can embed bitmaps in an SVG. SVG is what Inkscape does, for example.
Yeah.
And the SVG people said, okay, if you're going to embed a bitmap, you have to do it in one of the following formats, PNG or JPEG, which is dead handy. Then they said, you can also embed video. But they didn't specify a format. So if you embed a video in your SVG, you still have to have a browser plugin to play it, which is really fucking annoying. It was because they were too chicken shit to say, we're going to mandate this format. They went, oh, no, we'll just make it the fucking user's problem.
Mm.
Which is really fucking annoying.
Yeah, they should have really just said, this is what it's going to be.
Exactly. I mean, they could have said, you can embed an image in whatever format you like, and then make it the user's problem. If it's a PSD Photoshop file and your browser can't open it, it's your problem. But they didn't. They went, PNG, JPEG.
Yeah, but in the defense of the V3C there, for PNG and JPEG, they had the advantage that this was established standards, royalty-free standards they could rely on. For video and audio, well, I guess at the point when I did SVG, maybe only Vorbis was available, and it was definitely not standardized by anyone. So in a sense, like, being who they are and sort of, I guess, needing to only rely on other standards when they do these kind of things, I couldn't really say, okay, we won't depend on this video format. Especially since I also mandate royalty-free, they couldn't depend on the MPEG standards. Right?
I suppose. Right. I mean, what I'd like to see as well is
just briefly, it's at least good that they didn't mandate a proprietary video format.
Something I'd like to see as well in promoting free formats, more as an advocacy campaign, is to encourage hardware manufacturers to support Vorbis as an example. Because I think a reason why a lot of people are still... I mean, for example, all my music is in MP3, and the reason is because I've got...
Hate-free software.
the reason is... The reason is because I've got an iPod. I like the iPod. I've got an iRhythm. I like the iPod, right? And
you've got some orange sunglasses.
And it fucking...
Do you want a kill?
It all syncs up perfectly well with my system. But the point is
that because you've got an Apple?
The point is no, on my Linux desktop. But the point I'm making is that we can't ignore the fact that there's millions of fucking iPods out there, and I think a lot of people don't want to convert their music into Vorbis because they obviously can't get it onto their iPods. But I think, like, Apple seem to be like, we fucking hate DRM. Maybe there should be some... maybe there should be some campaign. I'd like to see an advocacy campaign to encourage more hardware manufacturers to be supporting Vorbis. Because, I mean, the iRiver is great in the fact that they support it, but the iRiver is actually quite shit.
It's very difficult to use.
But I have to say that if you actually look at most new media players that come out now, like portable music players, I mean, apart from the iTunes, iPod One, most of them do seem to actually start supporting both FLAC and Warbis at this
point.
Bullshit!
So Christian, iAudio does it.
I've got
that's an outrageous piece of bullshit. Is what that is. There was a discussion on the Lug Radio forums about this. Someone said, I would like to buy a hardware music player. I'm thinking about one. I've got about this as a budget, and I'd like it to support OGG, please. Can someone name some? And they came up with two, I think. There was a Samsung one, which now doesn't support OGGs anymore. There's the iAudio, the Cowan ones, yes, absolutely, which do.
iRiver?
And there were a couple of others, the iRiver one.
No,
the iRivers don't seem to anymore. The impression I get, at least, if you buy a brand new iRiver,
they don't.
You've got to you've got to put Rockbox on it. I mean, my Archos, right? Which is a fucking box that runs Linux, runs Qtopia, doesn't support ARM.
Here's the thing, isn't the whole point about the reason that the iPod, for example, doesn't support Vorbis is because it requires more processor memory or memory, processor or memory or something like that.
MP3 can be done on the chip, can't it? Whereas OGG has to be done like in memory.
In a processor.
There are chips to do OGG decoding.
There are chips to OGG decoding, but there are fewer of them. The reason my Archos doesn't support OGG is that the Archos people don't do the decompression in the processor. They bought a Texas Instruments Magic DSP chip.
Texas Instruments.
But isn't it a bit harsh to call what they're saying bullshit just because people in the radio community have no clue about stuff?
yes, it is.
I mean, to be fair to Shaller, he actually works for fucking media company.
So you can honestly say that a majority of players that come out now, if I just walk into an electrical shop and buy something and it's not an iPod, it'll probably support OGG.
Probably support Warbis, yes.
Bullshit.
Thank you. Thank you.
It is bullshit. I mean, the thing is, I mean, first of all, you've got the massively dominant device is the iPod.
Yeah, but you don't look at iPod.
So if we ignore 98% of the industry and look at the 2% that's left, you've basically got
the... obviously the Microsoft Zoom, that supports it, right?
Yeah.
So you've got the Zoom, you've got the creative gonad.
Nobody uses that.
The Sony Network Walkman. So bear with me, the people who aren't using the iPod and they aren't using the Zoom either because no one uses it, what are they all buying then? All these non-iPod people.
iAudio.
What's the market leader behind the iPod?
The Kintec 200.
All this 50 different Asian stuff, I don't have any clue about the name of it.
Okay, so... now that we've given Shaller a shoo-in for something, I want to ask him something based on things he probably does know about. Recently I read that Microsoft had started pushing their Windows Media format for cable boxes and for... video on demand stuff for cable services and for satellite TV boxes and things like that. Where are we in the open source world with high quality, say HD ready codecs? Is there anything out there?
Well, there is DRAC.
DRAC, isn't there?
Yeah. That's the BBC DRAC, one, yeah?
Yeah. The problem, of course, with DRAC is it's not there yet. So we are behind in the sense of getting into the standards of being defined today.
It's interesting how it's kind of been not there yet, as if it's just about there for the last 2 years.
I was going to say.
Last 4 years.
It's like wine, isn't it? The last fucking 5% is taking 10 years.
It's taking 95% of the time. That would be the way shit like this works. As I was like, they went, yeah, Dirac, it's brilliant. Okay, and we can compress a 50 pixel by 50 pixel video quite well. So now all we have to do is refine the compression a bit. Let's go and research wavelets. And 5 years later, they come back and still didn't work.
How are we getting on with Chikoshi then? That's almost ready, isn't it?
No, it isn't.
Anyway, let's not get sidetracked. I want to answer my question.
Sorry, we'll talk about your open source application later, won't we? Oh, hang on a second.
Well, the one he wrote a blog entry about.
I agree. I mean, Dirac has gotten much delayed. And in some sense, I mean, we are working on an implementation, as most of you know, called Schrödinger. And this implementation now has a decoder, which is basically ready. The encoder part encodes, but it doesn't encode really high quality image yet. So we have some work. And over time scale, with completing that project, is actually having it ready before next New Year's, which I guess is still a bit away, but still.
So just to clarify, Fiora's for lower quality video generally.
And crows.
And Dirac is for Is it specifically HD? I mean, is it?
No, it's not specifically HD. You can do lower quality too, but I think most.
But it supports, like, you can create really high definition video with it.
Well, you can do that with Teora too, right? I mean, the advantage of Dirac compared to Teora or H.264 compared to MPEG-2 is that you can have a higher quality image with a smaller file size.
Right.
And, I mean, you could, of course, make a Teora file. It's almost non-compressed and it's very high quality image, but you have a gigantic file too.
Stupid question, but so why can't you just have one codec that does all of this shit?
Well,
why can't you have one car that everyone fucking likes?
No, but
just like in East Germany, that's what we want. We want to mandate it.
No, but surely if it's just about compressing high quality video and low quality video into small file type, surely you could switch on.
It's not like there's one way to do compression.
I know there isn't, but I'm saying why can't you can't have a codec that's kind of got like two personalities sort of thing.
Well, it's a cumulative process, right? They started out and they sort of figure out some stuff, and then they start on one. And I mean, you don't want to have like 10 different versions all called MPEG-2, and then it's like random which version of MPEG-2.
Then someone gives you an MPEG-2 video, and your player won't play it because it's MPEG-2
for medium quality.
AB rather than it, and yours only plays AC, AD, AE, and AF.
Mm. Talking of things with lots of A's in the name, one thing that worries me is
AAC.
Yeah,
antelope.
One thing that worries me,
American
and our box,
is anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Right.
What? Sorry. Carry on.
Oh, right,
You fucking like orange, don't you?
I'm wearing it.
Rob Annable. Sorry, Susan just pointed out when I was showing some pictures of SkyCon that every time there's a picture of you, you were either in orange or around people who wear orange.
I was wearing stripes at SkyCon all the time. Mm. Anyway, one thing that worries me is at the moment with our analog broadcasting, anyone can... anyone.
I don't mean right now.
That says fuck you to aid.
Anyone can get an analog radio signal, TV signal, and watch it. Those are open standards by the very definition that you just, you know, need a radio and you can listen to it.
You can watch
it,
a radio signal, right?
I didn't say, well, yes, you can if it's got TV video information onto it.
Okay.
Right? Whereas
now. It's basically a TV signal.
But it's still on the radio.
Plus oscilloscopes.
So. So analog is open, right? Aliens can watch it, even if they haven't fucking heard of TV.
Or existed.
But now what we're doing is we're encumbering our broadcasting with technologies like AAC, with MPEG-4, whatever it is for the new digital TV boxes. What can we do to ensure that in 10 years' time or 50 years' time, we're not broadcasting a load of encumbered media? Even if broadcasting still exists. Well, you're right.
You can start sending in patches to Schrödinger.
To Schrödinger?
Yeah.
As in his cat?
No, the Schrödinger is the Fluendo implementation of Dirac, the BBC codec.
Oh, right.
Because Dirac and Schrödinger are the two scientists who together got the Nobel Prize.
Right, okay.
One didn't work very well.
So is that it then?
One took a lot longer to get ready than the other.
Basically, we're fucked.
Well, I mean, another good thing about Dirac is, of course, it is the BBC creating it. They are also pushing it.
And they're not
hard.
Even using it. They're going to use fucking Microsoft stuff.
That's what I was going to ask next, is that the BBC don't seem particularly interested in their own codec.
Well, they are, but the problem is it's not ready yet, right? So they have to, A, solve today's problem, and then look at what they're going to do forward.
Right.
And at least the BBC has the resources and the know-how to push Dirac into all the standardization forums and so on.
Yeah.
To make sure that this gets used.
We shouldn't complain because it's bloody good that the BBC are developing this.
So to go back round to the beginning then. What we think the best way to get free media formats out there is to have someone with lots of market pull push them. Opera and Firefox to push Theora and Vorbis, the BBC to push Dirac. That kind of thing. So we need to get big organisations on board. Is that the best way of doing it?
Absolutely.
Grassroots advocacy isn't working.
That's a sort of duh.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a duh statement. You wouldn't say the same thing about Linux, for example. I mean, I believe we all feel grassroots advocacy works, because here we are doing it. Check it out. we need to let IBM take it over for us and make them push it.
It's not about taking over, it's about supporting it, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the hard lesson learned with Vorbis and Teora was that making it technically available, like we can do in open source community, isn't enough. You need actually to get some content providers about and start getting content out there.
Yep.
Because nobody cares about the codec that this doesn't have content, and vice versa.
I think the truth is nobody cares about the codec, apart from us, like people like us. If I went to my sister and said, look at this video of my wedding, it's in Ogg Theora, she'd go, What?
Fuck you.
Yeah, but well, what hope you could say is this is Altiora sisters. You have to go to this site and download the ActiveX components to support Altiora.
The ActiveX, sorry.
And this is a process that needs to happen. Yeah. The people and one group I'm actually sort of hoping to get sort of into is using free codecs when Dirac is out, and also when we maybe have either Ghost or a better quality version of Orbis for Soronson is to get like all the people doing like DivXs to switch.
Surely that. Another way as well is to make really, really high quality porn and make it only available in OGG.
Yeah, but then someone would just rip it.
No, they wouldn't bother, would they?
Why wouldn't they?
Because they'd be blind. They wouldn't be able to do
people
it.
People are getting really, really high quality videos on HD DVD, and then they release a HD DVD, and 15 minutes later, there it is in DivX. One of the things I think is interesting is, because I was looking at this last week. High quality porn. Fluendo, I've got a Java applet that plays OGG.
Cortado.
Which is, and I thought, wouldn't it be really handy if you could have a YouTube-y sort of a thing where it detects whether you've got Java and then shows the applet? I was going to do it for the Lug Radio Live videos. But you can't detect whether you've got Java inside a browser. It's really fucking annoying. Well, so I couldn't make a seamless experience.
Did you look at the blend of demos? Because we tried to do that there. That you have a page where you have actually three versions of the page. One using Windows Media, one using the Java applet, and one using Flash Video.
Yeah.
And as far as it do, I think it tries to do some kind of auto-detection to figure out what you're doing.
It doesn't do it properly, though. I was going to send you an email about that.
Is Cortado open source?
Yes.
So they await your patch.
It's Flash Video.
The problem is not Cortado.
No. Because the Flash itself
is fine.
The
browser. It's you don't.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Best not
later.
Have two conversations at the same time. It doesn't generally work, does it?
But do you think? I mean, you've got a way there. You could potentially build a YouTube with Theora using the Cortado applet. But nobody's doing it.
Anyone can build a fucking YouTube.
Just need happy
it's the content, isn't it, that you're after?
No, absolutely.
And Asian guys singing to a well. Boy zone, whatever it is.
Until there was Flash Video.
Not in Turkey.
That sort of thing didn't really take off.
Yeah.
Because you had too many people who'd go along and they'd get a big box saying, you haven't got a plugin. Click here, download the plugin. Because you didn't have the latest WMV or you only have Windows Media Player 6 or you were on a Mac or something.
I hate quick.
You know? Whereas now, you could assume lots of people have got Flash, and that's why the concept of video sites like that took off. The reason YouTube took off is, don't know why that one's the most popular
for that,
one.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but let's really thank Christian, who's been a wonderful source of inspiration for this segment.
Yes. Can we?
Okay.
Was that the interview with him, or are we doing a proper interview later?
That's proper interview. No.
Okay.
Okay.
Catch you later, shall I?
Expect more fucking media-related discussion.
Yeah.
Recently there's been a lot of discussion about KDE4. Have you guys been keeping up with it?
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yes.
So we've seen, there's been some, there's been some discussion
specifics.
on the...
I saw it quite a bit at FOSDEM. That's FOSDEM.
Are you on the fucking commission or something?
What did you say about KDE4 at FOSDEM?
Yeah, go on.
The menu thing's totally different. Very interesting.
Really?
That was a pretty heavily technical description. There. Tell us a bit more about it than that.
You should work on
that's where my fucking knowledge ends.
So when you said you saw a lot about it at FOSDEM, what you meant was it was going on in some other tent at FOSDEM and you weren't paying any attention.
Yeah, tents. That's what they have at FOSDEM.
You mean there was a screenshot?
Perhaps you've never been the knack.
So you didn't watch any KDE4 stuff then?
I actually just played around with the desktop a little bit and...
And what did you think?
I thought, wow, this is really different to KDE3.
Aid was too busy in the massively proprietary voiceover IP track.
Yeah, because they have one of those.
proprietary
voiceover IP track.
What was different about it?
Jono, why don't you tell us what your point was?
Okay, so KDE's been kicking off recently, and we saw all of the mock-ups and the ideas and things like that, and I think a lot of us thought, yeah, what a load of bullshit, that's never going to happen. But they seem to be actually making some progress, whether you agree or disagree with the direction of KDE4.
Make quite a lot of progress.
They are actually really beginning to implement a lot of this stuff. And I have a concern that this is going to kick GNOME's ass.
Why a concern? Why not?
The reason why I have a concern... A while back I sent an email to a bunch of the leaders in the GNOME community, such as Jeff Waugh, Miguel de Casa, Federico...
Lena Quintero.
What a cool name.
It is.
A cool name.
Almost as good as German Pokemon.
And his girlfriend's got the word oral in her surname, in her name as well. And they do nothing but cook. Anyway, those people and...
All night long.
And Havoc. Havoc. What a great name. Havoc Pennington.
Robert something Havoc Pennington.
Is this the only cool name segment?
Or is this
the GNOME...
And Dave Bellend
desktop.
As well. But anyway, I mailed these people and I said, you know...
Oh, you sorted that, will you?
The GNOME community needs some leadership about what's going on, because for a while we've been hearing about Topaz, and we've been hearing about GNOME 3.0.
Wait a minute, we
have to clarify that
it's the same thing, isn't it?
We have to clarify these are two different things.
CPZ not stands anymore. 3.0.
TPZ.
Right? Well, ETP for my bunghole.
Well, I mean, the idea originally was they said, okay, what we're going to do, GNOME 3.0, we're going to invent Project Topaz, which is talking about 3.0, and it was all the futuristic stuff, but now.
People as top level objects and all
now,
that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, 3.0 is now just the next version of GNOME. The next API breaking version
or something.
The next API breaking version of GNOME.
Right.
Topaz is all the weirdo futuristic stuff which everyone would like to see, but no one's actually working.
So Topaz is the equivalent of a flying car, right?
So think of Topaz as, yeah, the whole next generation desktop thing that's been pushed around as an idea.
It's not like a flying car, it's like concept cars. You know how companies make concept cars, and they're all fucking really brilliant, but no one ever actually makes a car like it. That's what Topaz is.
So anyway, I remember the first time I went to Guadix was a couple of years back, and there was a whole theme about Topaz and about, you know, be a part of Topaz and all the rest of it. And there was some discussion there, and nothing happened. And then there was some discussion at the last Guadix about Topaz.
It's true, because the stuff hasn't really done very much, has it, recently?
The thing is, one of the things that attracted me to GNOME from KDE, apart from it being a really usable environment, was the fact that I got the impression that they were always looking for new ideas and cool things to try. And with KDE 4 defining their own direction and moving forward on it, yeah, it's not ground-shakingly different. It's not like low fat that Mirko's been pissing around with. It looks like KDE, but it's gonna be different.
Yeah, okay.
With the GNOME community, they don't seem to be actually making a decision about what to do with any of this kind of shit.
There's a loss of direction. There's a lot of kind of moving forward, I think, but there doesn't seem to be any big shining goal that anybody's heading for.
And
In GNOME.
Yeah. It concerns me because, I think the project, in my mind, doesn't realize how much of a threat KDE are going to be. I mean, it's great because it's all competition. It's always going to make a better desktop for users.
That's a good point, yeah.
But it concerns me that there is a lack of leadership. Now, when Jeff replied to my email, he pointed out, you know, you've got to bear in mind that a lot of these people are very busy with other projects. So I understand, and that's a good point, well made. But we need someone to stand up and say, this is what we're going to do with GNOME. This is where we're going to put this next generation.
Didn't they do that a couple of years ago? Like,
well, they did. I mean, the group of people emailed, basically, and a few others led GNOME into GNOME 2.0. And defined the direction and the things that it would embody. But I don't think it should be that group of people again.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be, you know, some people should arise from...
From
the body of GNOME developers.
If KDE's going to be better, I'll just use KDE, I don't care.
Well,
if GNOME's going to fall behind, I'll switch. I've done it before.
The reason I don't think, personally, I'd want to do that, is that unless KDE radically changed some of the really core underlying concepts, I don't like it. I like things like... The best example I can come up with is someone once... was writing about GNOME versus KDE, trying to set it up as a battle or whatever.
Yep, yep.
And they said, the GNOME people, right, they want to simplify everything to the point where you just got one button which says, do what I need to do.
Oh, Linus.
And like, no, it wasn't Linus, but someone talking about when Linus said
that's
that.
It's a perfect interface.
Exactly! and they were saying that like it was an insult, a terrible thing, and if I had a computer where I walked up to it and it had one button which said, do what I mean, and I pressed it and it did what I mean, that'd be fucking brilliant! That's not a bad thing. Whereas the KDE people... don't have that as a goal, which is fine.
And
because there are a lot of people who don't want that as a goal, that bloke.
The reason why I'm making this point as well is coming across as someone who is, I consider myself, I'm not a contributor to the GNOME project, but I'm aligned with it. I'm interested in GNOME.
Yeah.
And I'm interested and I care about the direction of it.
John@KDE.org.
I don't think it exists anymore.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I want to see the project succeed, and I think the GNOME project is a great bunch of people and a great bunch of ideas, but it's just lacking leadership right now, and it needs someone to step up and say, this is what we're going to do, get people... Then you need someone like Aaron Saigo, and I think one person who could do this, not wanting to shovel this on his shoulders, is Alex Gravelly. The stuff he's done with Gimme.
Gimme,
I mean, he's just got up and he's decided to do something.
Who's in Gimme?
Eh?
Never heard of Gimme, never heard of Alex Gravelly. Come on, Gimme.
Eh?
Never heard of Alex Gravelly, never heard of Gimme. What
Alex Gravelly is a GNOME developer. I think he works at VMware. And he developed this alternative to like a panel called Gimme, which has like a bunch of different sections for accessing your applications, for accessing your files and things like that.
You've got sort of a document section and a people I know section and things
like
that. Oh, okay. The sorts of things that people have talked about with Topaz
is
the kind of thing Gimme does.
And he's just done it.
And he's just stood up and did it.
He's just done it.
I think he started out as a prototype and then it's matured. And he's stuck with it. And that's the kind of thing we need.
need, like, I remember when I was part of KDE, you'd always have people saying, I had this wacky idea and I hacked up some code and I tried this and I tried that, and that's happening less and less now. You don't see that as much. It is happening. I mean, some people like Mirko Muller writing things like low fat, you know, and
proprietary software.
Well, I'm not going to say anything. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, well, I sort of started looking into sort of doing an article about what GNOME 2 could be built as like a preparation for GUIDEC.
Is it for Playboy?
For Playboy.
Yeah.
Well, for putting on GNOME desktop or whatever. And I started sort of trying, and what I did, I started looking at sort of what was Windows Vista advertising doing, what Mac OS X was advertising doing, and what KDE was doing. And I sort of tried to see, okay, what are the major things happening out there? What are sort of the big changes happening? And what I sort of discovered was that for every bullet point almost I found, there was an equivalent GNOME project. But none of these and some of these projects probably started out thinking this is like something we should do for GNOME 3.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happened instead is that they actually discovered there isn't really any reason to do GNOME 3 before because of this, because it can easily fold it into GNOME 2. Mm. A good example there is, in Vista, one thing they advertise is that they have much improved support for like exchanging and address book information, photos and so on from your cell phone. And have this sort of connection manager thing that's like your cell phone pops up and you can sync your photos and whatever, and videos. And this is a nice feature. And there's actually a guy working on that for GNOME 2.2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, all this feature is not something that needs a new GNOME version, right? Because it's just something you add on to create more full-fledged functionality.
I think the plan's always been to continue, because I mean, there's been discussion of like GNOME as like an enterprise desktop and continuing solid, reliable releases. And I think we always need to have that. It seems though that we, like, one of the things that was being discussed about Topaz was the idea of kind of a branch maybe and things going off and people experimenting and having a playground where they can play around with stuff like this.
Like Fedora and traditional Red Hat.
Yeah. Same sort of thing, yeah. And I think we need that. I think we need, because I think there's a lot of people like, I mean, I'm using him as an example, like Mirko Muller. I mean, he's just, Alex Gravely, who just need a playground to fuck around with stuff.
Haven't we got Beryl for that? Playground to fuck around with stuff.
Yeah, but that's at a window manager level.
Beryl's just the window manager, composite manager thing. The thing I thought was an interesting kind of way of looking at it. Yes, you've got people fiddling about with this kind of thing in GNOME, but a lot of the work that's going into GNOME at the moment is kind of low-level infrastructure-y stuff. It's going into HAL, and it's going into the Bluetooth stuff, and things like...
Isn't that all done?
Compies and... No, that's the point. It's all done kind of theoretically at prototype level, but in practice, none of it actually hooks to, or a lot of it doesn't hook together as well as it could do. So, a lot of work's going to that, and that's really important, absolutely. So, but I don't know whether people are doing too much of that, or there should be another group of people who are then saying, let's build cool stuff on top of this.
But the problem divides into two areas, I'd say, is that we need to first of all have a place where people can piss around with ideas. Like, people can write something like Gimme or Lofat, or come up with, like different widgets and things like the libsexy stuff. Just come up with little ideas and try things out. But then I think the main thing that GNOME needs right now, the thing that's really lacking, is it needs a design direction. It needs people to sit
leadership.
Down. I'd love to see a bunch of GNOME people and people who are interested in the project get together for a usability summit. Get a bunch of people in the room who know
Birmingham, maybe.
Maybe.
Why wouldn't it be at Guadec?
Somewhere like at Guadec, and get a bunch of people, sit down, come out with the ideas, and start working on a
but
Topaz
isn't that
direction.
What they did last year?
I think it was kind of like. There was a general idea of coming out with ideas and coming up with things that we can do. But the thing is, it needs someone to own it. It needs someone to say, this is what we're going to do, and make decisions.
That's the thing. It needs someone who's already a reasonably core part of the GNOME community. I mean, none of us four could do it, for example.
And who doesn't have much else on at the minute.
Yeah, that's right, the point. Okay. You need someone who, if they stood up and said, we should go in this direction, a reasonable portion of the GNOME community would go, yes, we agree with that. So you kind of pull everybody else along behind you. Alex Gravely's a good example. I can see Federico doing it. I think, you know, the old guard, Jeff War, Havoc, people like that, they're kind of too associated with the last big serious batch of changes. You wouldn't want them again.
Is there a
they're
problem?
They're old hat to some extent, which is a bit sad to say it, and they might be upset about it.
Is there a problem that people are paid by companies to spend time developing on GNOME, hacking GNOME and things like that, but nobody's really paid by a company to take a leadership position on things like this,
I mean, you've got things like the, what's it called, the big new menu in Suzy. The slab.
Yeah, no menu thing.
Yeah, I think
it's called the slab.
I think they call it the slab. Yeah. I mean, so they're doing stuff. I mean, it's still only incremental. It's not.
But I'm talking about
the big new shining topaz goal.
This leadership kind of thing.
They've obviously got a goal. Part of the problem, to my mind, is they're not leading the gnome community. They're leading Novell in that direction.
Which we'll see more and more, I think, in the future.
And Susie, which to some extent I can understand, but it is starting to affect, as individual distributions get more of an identity to themselves, as Ubuntu start thinking, what do we need to do that's good for Ubuntu, rather than necessarily what's good for GNOME at the expense of Ubuntu, as Novell do that, as more corporate interests get involved, and people start thinking, how can we make money and stop Red Hat making money
customers? No, I mean, isn't the case that what the distributions do, they focus on actually what users actually care about, and like, users care about getting their codecs installed, or they care about easy menu navigation and so on. They don't really care about sort of experimental stuff. and in some sense, like, fixing Bluetooth or and these kind of things, this is what really people want, because, I mean,
it's got to work, yeah.
Anyway, my conclusion after trying to compare all the things is that the only thing is sort of that maybe we could really reform in GNOME in a big way, that it could be it's like making everything more glitz-oriented in some sense.
Yeah.
And I think the project that has to lead the way in that is starting from the bottom in a sense and start with GTK.
Yeah.
So GTK has to decide, okay, we're going for a new major version and we're going to focus a lot on making GTK the fucking best toolkit for doing glitz. And through that you can also release a lot of other energy, I guess, sort of when the whole project starts moving over to this new version of GTK.
You see, I mean,
there are people potentially doing this kind of thing at every layer of the stack. GTK people are back in and out at Cairo, and you've got Topaz doing the icons and the pictures and stuff, and you've got Beryl and Compiz at the X level, and you've got people working on ARGLX and things like that. So people are doing this kind of thing at every level, but no one's grabbing it all and pulling it all together.
But I think that the two things that are standing in the way, because I think in my mind we need someone to stand up and say, I'm going to inspire the GNOME community, lead them, define a direction, get people motivated to work on this sort of thing. It needs that kind of person. But there's two things that stand in the way of that in my mind. First of all, the one thing that GNOME, I think, has been its benefit, but also it's a negative thing for it, is the people involved. In one side, it's a very, very cool bunch of people are very, very inspiring to be a part of. You know, when people meet people like Nat Friedman, meet people like Miguel de Caza, they think, wow, that's the Nat Friedman, that's the Miguel de Caza, and that's a great thing.
Yeah.
But also, it makes it really difficult for people to stand up and say, I'm going to do this. Because it's such a formidable group of people that nobody really wants to stand up unless they're extremely confident and take control. That's one aspect. But the second aspect is not being partisan. Because the minute someone like J.P. Roosevelt stands up and says, I'm going to do this, everyone will say, that's just because it's Novell. Oh, the minute Daniel Holback stands up, someone's going to say, that's just an Ubuntu thing. It needs to be someone relatively non-partisan, someone who's relatively, you know, community-orientated, to make sure that it's the direction of the community. Well, and
so maybe the GNOME Foundation needs to get enough money together to employ someone to do this.
Hello.
That's the sort of position Jeff Ward was in. I don't know whether we need Jeff Ward start doing this, or whether we need a new Jeff Ward for the new century.
We need a Jeff Ward.
Jeff Ward 2.0.
We do need a Jeff Ward. I mean, he himself, that's why, as I understand it, one of the reasons at least, why he left Canonical, because he felt he was going too much in an Ubuntu direction and not enough in a GNOME direction.
I don't know. I think he just wanted to do more stuff for GNOME.
Okay, but that's about
it. I think that's what he just said, wasn't it?
No. Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between saying this company was making us go too much this direction.
I don't think the company.
Forgot about my what?
Because he's working. Because he's working for a company inherently. Yeah, you have to be partisan to some extent. And that's why I think, I think that the impression I got at least was that's how he felt about it. And so he wanted to even concentrate on GNOME rather than concentrating on Ubuntu's bit of GNOME and filtering that back up to core GNOME.
I got the impression that he basically wanted to spend more time on GNOME. I don't think there was any...
Jeff, send us an email and tell us clarify. The reasons for your
decision. I thought he just wanted to do consultancy work.
Oh, well, okay.
Because he said swimming upstream.
But do we,
yeah, I know,
do,
but
do
he's
we...
clarified since in like a Linux format interview that his main thing was to go and do consultancy work.
Oh, right, cool. But do
he
I...
He was on Floss Weekly as well recently, so
that was good interview.
Go over to Twit and have a listen to that.
I'd like to see either Jeff do it or someone be the new Jeff.
I think it needs someone new. I think Jeff does a great job, but I think it needs someone who...
Is there anyone there, though?
I think it needs someone with... basically, what you want is you want someone who combines Jeff's skills, Havoc's skills, and Federico's skills.
Fucking Superman, then,
you need someone who can
wait... The problem is you need the Uber guy.
This is the whole point.
I disagree. You don't need someone. You need a group of people.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Jeff, or it wasn't like Havoc, or it was a group of people who had enough momentum behind them to actually...
I agree, in part.
Don't need one guy who's got all of Jeff's skills, Havoc's skills, and Federico's skills. You need a guy who's got Jeff's skills, you need a person who's got Jeff's skills, and a person who's got Havoc's skills, and a person who's got Federico's skills, and them as a team could lead us to Topaz.
I think so long as that team works really well together and can make progress.
But the last batch
then that was one particular example. There's lots of situations where you get people who have got complementary skills, but they can never come to any kind of consensus.
It's a lot more like that you're going to find them than you're going to find Superman.
Not necessarily. It's not talking about someone like Superman. Like, take, for example, Rastaman.
Yeah.
Right? Rastaman is that person.
As opposed to Superman. Aaron's
No, he isn't. Hang on. Rastaman hasn't got Jeff's skills, which is why no one's using Enlightenment.
Nobody's using Enlightenment because it hasn't been released in the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the point. And if you had Gnome people saying, we're going to do Gnome 2, and we're going to spend ages fiddling with it but not actually get it out, right? That's the sort of thing that Havoc, I believe at least, would have said, no, we need to actually get it out and then start revving it so people can use it.
The point I'm making is not that this person's got to be perfect in every way, but this person needs an appreciation of each of these different areas. So the thing about Rastaman, he's a developer, he's an advocate, and he defines a design direction. That's the kind of thing person he is. Aaron Saiga is exactly the same. He's doing that for the KD project. The thing is, you need someone. I'm not saying they have to be perfect.
It's not him on his own.
Of course he isn't. I'm not saying it is. The point I'm making is the
last two of these items that we've seen, KD going to KDE 4, which you thought was a good thing, and Gnome going to Gnome 2, which you thought was a good thing, were both run by a small, closely knit team.
No, the point I'm making is...
And what we're saying is we should find a small, closely knit team. No. And you're saying, no, we should find one person.
No, you misunderstand me. I'm not saying one person does everything. I'm saying it needs someone to lead that direction. That direction might be fleshed out by people, but it needs fundamentally someone who people look at and say, that's our leader, that's the person who's defining our direction, where we're going.
Well,
it needs one person.
I'd like to see someone stand up from the known community and do that.
That's the whole fucking point of what I'm saying right now.
Alex Gravely's a good example. But I don't know how much he's doing for... How much he's thinking about the wider Gnome direction as opposed to the way Guinea's going.
The problem is that no one's even come clear to even insinuating that they'd like to do this. I can understand no one... We're not going to have one person one day and just stand up and say, I'm the man for the job. Or I'm the woman for the job. We need somebody who's going to be a gradual process where they hint that they're the right person for the job and other people have confidence in them.
It's not even that. They don't need to say, I'm the person for this job at all. They just start going in that direction. Well, and then other people recognise it. It's not an elected post.
No, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that it's a series of steps. Mm. Somebody basically makes a series of gestures that says, I think I can do this. They don't stand up and say, I'm doing this.
Going back to the people, I strongly believe that this has to start with GTK, and in that sense, the people I'm sort of looking for, that I think can provide a leadership for a new generation of Gnome, would be like a group maybe like Federico, Calvert, Berad.
Yeah.
These, I think they have the skills, they have the respect in the community, and they control GTK between them. So they could say, okay, this is where we want to take GTK, and these are things we want to enable. And that will, I think, sort of mobilize the whole community and say, okay, well, if you provide these possibilities, then I who maintain this module can do this, and sort of you create the whole idea about...
That definitely sounds like a good idea.
I agree in part, but I think that there's a difference between maintaining and creating a good toolkit and then creating a user-focused desktop.
Yeah, but, GNOME 2.0 was in some sense a result of the new GTK, because I said, okay, well, what did you fuck up in GTK 1? Font support was horrible, we needed accessibility support and so on, and these decisions what sort of like causing a chain effect up in the stack and say, okay, let's change a lot of things as we fix these issues.
That's interesting then. So you thought that GTK's changes led the change in direction of Gnome.
Yeah,
I thought it was the other way around. They said, this is the way it looked to me was that Gnome said we want to go in this direction, and therefore we're going to need this from GTK.
Yeah, that's
so
what
Gnome
I thought
was leading
as well.
GTK,
yeah.
Not GTK leading Gnome.
No,
that's interesting then.
Yeah, and I think the same is true actually for KDE, because every major KDE release has come about in my opinion, often due to a new version of Qt.
Yeah, definitely.
So as a new version of Qt comes out, the new options and so on, that sort of releases energy for making a new KDE version. I think the same is true for Gnome and GTK. A new GTK version will mean a new Gnome version.
Yeah.
Excellent. So stand up.
Stand up and be counted.
And I suggest, give us a leader. I suggest that ACK actually takes over ownership of GDK to do
second
it.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit short of respecting the GNOME community for that, to be honest with you.
Or any community.
So just to hammer the point home again, Alex Gravelly, you seem to have been selected.
So I don't know if you noticed, but we've got Christian Schaller of Fluendo in the room. And I didn't realise this until just now, being the fucking dullard that I am. He's actually a pimper of marketing shit, not a hacker. I mean,
he can actually do it as well.
He's scum, is what he is. And So, so Christian, welcome to Log Radio.
Thank you.
It's very nice to have you here.
Do you want to compare Gantt charts?
You're not going to ask him about marketing now, are you?
All right then, I'll refrain and I'll do it in an email later.
What are the three E's of marketing?
All right, so
flyer, email,
E cocksucker. Okay, so just briefly, I mean, how did you get into marketing free software? And I realise Fluendo doesn't just do free software, but I mean, how did it all come about for you?
Well, my first job actually after leaving university, having taken a degree in economics and marketing, was actually a job where I was an administrator of a Lotus Notes network.
Really? You
know, all exciting stuff. And
the worst bit of software.
And sort of what I sort of, and at that point, it sort of felt like Windows was like an unstoppable force coming into the server space and pushing out Novell Network, which was common at the time, and pushing out Unix.
You were right.
You weren't wrong. How futuristically looking of you.
And what I sort of then started feeling was that since computers and networks are sort of like the foundation of a modern society, and they are important for like communication, our democracy and everything, I felt I didn't really like having one company essentially control the technology ran this. So I started figuring out, okay, what are a realistic alternative here? And the only thing I saw at the time, which I felt had any chance of having an impact, was Linux, because I felt it actually sort of changed the rules of the game by being open source and having the whole thing with the GPL and LGPL around it.
Mm. So just an instinctive dislike of having one company in charge of that.
Yeah, I wanted something that was open and free for everyone to compete and participate in and everything. And also this also was, I guess, the reason why I also eventually got into GNOME, because for me, the important thing was not that my dentist ran an open source application keeping track of my feelings or something, but I wanted an open source platform, and I wanted everyone, no matter what licensing we're using, to be able to use that platform.
Right.
So that was sort of how I got into the whole thing with trying to, I started using Linux and eventually got into being part of the GNOME project.
So how did you get involved in the GStreamer / media sort of side of things?
After having done GNOME for a while, I sort of started thinking, okay, what are we lacking in GNOME? And what I sort of felt was sort of...
Just before you go on, you said after having done GNOME for a while, what were you doing for GNOME?
What I did for a very long while was actually writing the weekly GNOME newsletter.
Right.
And this was, I guess, in a pre-blog era, so it had sort of more of a function.
Keeping
track of what's happening on mailing lists and making like a weekly newsletter. And I think that was quite popular for a while. And I also did actually quite a lot of web maintenance work for GNOME.
Yeah.
Anyway, at that point, the only media player we had available for Unix was like Xanim, if any of you remember that tool from olden days.
Fucking Nora, Jesus!
And I felt
I'm very old now. Can
yours play MNG files?
And I really felt, okay, we need media playback. That's something that's going to be a big thing, and we need it now. And I was sort of looking around, okay, what do we have here? And about that same time, Eric Waltonson sent out a mail saying he had this thing called GNOME Streamer, actually, at the time, which was based on a research project he had done at his university. And I decided, okay, let's do an interview with these guys for this newsletter I was doing. And then I got in touch with Wim Tymans and Eric Waltonson, and did the interview. And I sort of stuck around in the community after that and started helping with maintaining a decent website and trying to promote GStreamer as much as possible and so on.
Have you had your civil relationship with Wim now?
Officially announced.
Officially announced.
No, it's unfortunately not been legalized.
Okay, okay. It's still just, Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Okay.
Yeah, no, so that's how I got sort of into GStreamer and started helping, trying to push that. And one embarrassing thing actually I noticed was that I did a lot of the sort of advocacy for GStreamer in the beginning. And if you do Google searches, you can actually find statements from me, like going back every year for the last 6 years saying that next year GStreamer 1.0 will be on.
Bit like this is the year of the Linux desktop.
Yeah. This is the year of GStreamer.
Yeah.
1997, 1998, 1999, 2000.
So when did Fluendo come into it all?
Well, Fluendo came about as Julian Mutt, who's the founder of Fluendo. He started using it for making a, well, actually a media center application for himself to run at home. And he had also been thinking about, okay, how can I start a company around open source? And he felt that, like, doing something around GStreamer would be a good idea. And his initial idea actually was to do the streaming server, Flumotion, because he felt what was lacking was actually a streaming server that A, was easy to distribute across a lot of machines, and B, was also easy to interoperate, integrate with payment systems and these kind of things.
Yeah.
So he decided to fund Fluendo, and he tried to hire as many of the core GStreamer hackers as possible to get that going.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's a pretty fucking cool company. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I think it's one of those companies that not only employs really cool people, but you're also doing lots of interesting work as well, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're getting
making a profit out of open source as well.
Yeah, so I think we've sort of gotten off a good start, and I think at least for people who are interested in doing multimedia on Linux, I guess we are the company to sort of try to search for.
So, I mean, everyone knows, hopefully everyone knows that Fluendo do GStreamer and you're doing Flumotion, the server.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you're doing that people don't know about?
A lot of the work we're doing and earning money is actually do consulting services for other companies. And a recent project we're doing together with a company called... the product I work on is called Songbird, and this is a music player.
Yeah, I saw it at Guardic. Sorry, Potsdam, and it's really interesting.
Zool-based.
I can feel a rant coming on in a second.
Who was it?
You, Mr.
I think there is one particular website that doesn't work particularly well in Songbird.
Oh, it's Mr. Shut up.
What website would that be?
Reason the Lug Radio site doesn't work brilliantly well with Songbird is that we have a mirror network. The idea behind Songbird, you go to a website and it says, I found the following podcasts for you to download. Yes. And normally it would say, I found the following one podcast. And for us it says, I found the following 58, because we've got all the mirrors.
Well, no, it does 58 on the other website. It's just that they're like, here's number one, here's episode two, here's episode three, here's episode four.
Okay, so we get 346, and here's six copies of episode one, here's six copies of episode two. And the reason for that is that we have the mirror now.
Okay, yeah. I think I triggered this digression, but let's move back to the...
So anyway, Songbird, yeah.
So they're making this cross-platform player and said, okay, we have Zool, which is a great tool to make a cross-platform UI. But the problem for them was that they discovered, okay, so we have to try to support GStreamer on Linux, we have to support QuickTime on Mac, and we have to support Windows DirectShow on Windows. And this complicated code and create a lot of headaches. My English is not that good, it seems. So they came to us and said, okay, we see that you have some support in GStreamer for working on Mac OS and for working on Windows. So are interested in working with us to make sure that GStreamer can work as a middleware for us across all three platforms.
Okay.
So that's something we're working at currently, which I think will be quite exciting, because it means that, Songbird and other projects coming along will be able to target GStreamer, and it will work perfectly on Windows and perfectly on Mac and perfectly on Linux. And
have you? So it's going to benefit Songbird, but it's also going to benefit everybody else that uses GStreamer.
Yeah. So GStreamer, are you going to talk to the native APIs on all the platforms? I mean, GStreamer talks to Alson, whatever. Is it going to talk to DirectSound or whatever on Windows and talk to whatever the hell the Mac one's called?
Core Audio.
Correct. Core Audio, yeah, thank you, that's what it's called.
Yes, I mean, for GStreamer, DirectSound is just another audio sync. So, like, on Linux we use Alsa, on Solaris we use Sun Audio, and then on Windows we use DirectShow, we use Core Audio or whatever it's called, and Mac OS X.
So, obviously Fluendo is the company when it comes to GStreamer and when it comes to... monetizing it. Sort of. Have you found that there's a lot of commercial interest in GStreamer? I mean, because you never really hear about commercial use of GStreamer. You hear about little things like Nokia use it here and there, but are smallish companies and large companies actually using it? Are you getting business from it?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I'm sort of covered by more NDAs than I can probably come to.
Fantastic!
I guess what I can say is that at this point, as far as I know, almost every major cell phone manufacturer is actually looking at using GStreamer on their phones.
Nice.
Without naming any actual names.
Can we name them?
If we were to name some names, for instance, if we said Nokia, Ericsson, Samsung,
Motorola,
the OpenMoco people, you'd just sit there and look blank at us.
Yeah, like, correctly.
Wise.
Oh, them.
Oh, yeah. Well, really?
Sanyo.
No.
I thought NEC had given up.
Still exist.
Sanyo. I don't know. Alba.
Grundig.
Bush.
George W.
Speak for yourself.
Fluendo, do they have any plans of bringing out, like, Fluendubuntu, that's going to be like Ubuntu, but with all the media stuff working?
Well, this is actually top secret. We plan on killing off Ubuntu by our Flubuntu distribution very soon, actually.
Christian was really trying to, the Ubuntu Developer Summit was really trying to push Stepbuntu.
Stepbuntu, what's that?
Is it after step or was it
GNU step?
GNU step with Ubuntu.
Right.
That would be wise. I'd use it if it existed.
Mind you, Christian Scheller also fell into a bin in front of everybody at the Ubuntu Developer Summit.
That sounds good.
Let's not be mean to
him. So I take it they don't have any plans to release an operating system?
No, we're not getting into an operating system game. We instead try as far as possible to partner with existing distributions and be there.
A question I had, I mean, I'm sure you get this question all the time,
but
one of the things... Can you fix my media player?
basically...
It's not Matthew Garrett.
The whole thing about the codecs, I mean, if you look at the Fluendo MP3 decoder implementation, that's...
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
That's free software, as far as I understand it, and I can download it and run it and everything, but I don't understand what the status is of being able to play all these codecs in GStream applications. Are you solving that kind of problem? I mean, will we be able to play WMV in... in Totem, for example? You're going to say you can do that already, but I can't, and I don't know how to fix it.
Well, yeah. So I mean, what we did recently, like we really opened our Fluendo web shop, where we sell a lot of these codecs, like selling Windows Media codecs, even. And currently, what you do when you buy some gear, you get to download the tarball, and you have to put the SO files into the correct directory, which we sort of tried to explain. But what we're doing there is we're building up on something called Easy Codec Install that was sort of started at the Ubuntu Developer Summit.
Mm.
And the idea for it there is actually that we're going to provide a little application.
Does it use Auto Package?
No.
It's the native package manager.
Does it work on things other than Ubuntu?
Yeah, it will work on any distribution, because what people will do, it will be told by distribution applications that, okay, you're missing codec for this, and then it will pop up saying, okay, Fluendo actually offer this codec for you. You can go here and buy it, and then you get entitlements, and then it will automatically download and install it for you. And it will also tell you, okay, there's a new version of that codec package available, so you can
What's it called again? Easy Codec Installer.
And how much?
Easy Codec Installation.
Yeah. Okay. How much does it cost to say buy Windows Media Video, WMV?
Well, if what we have done in the shop is that we try to bundle things. So if you just buy one codec, I think we currently charge €8 for that.
Right. Okay.
But if you buy a package of multiple codecs, it becomes quickly much cheaper per codec.
It's not a lot of money, is it? Really?
Is that decoders or is there encoders as well?
Currently only decoders, but we have encoders in the work, so I'm expecting to have Windows Media encoders out soon.
Really?
The majority of people really need decoders.
That's not a lot of money, is it, really?
No. Fuck all. I mean.
Stupid question. Windows Media Player does that. If I download an Ogg Theora file at work and try and play it, Windows Media Player says, you don't have a codec for this, go and look for a codec, and then it says, couldn't find a codec and doesn't play. is that just because it's wrong or because Microsoft don't offer it? And are you gonna solve the problem by making sure Fluendo offer a codec for every single possible media format?
We are going to try to offer codec for at least all the major formats. And of course, what's also happening is that at least for formats that are freely distributable, the thing with Easy Codec Install is it also enables distributions to like say, okay, well, you want FLAC support? Okay, we can give you that because we didn't bother putting it in by default. So it doesn't necessarily have to be over packages. It can also use the distribution packages.
Right.
Okay. Right. Oh, okay. Mm.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you guys are doing a pretty good job. What's the future hold, do you think? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of stuff you can't talk about because you've got relationships with companies, but where do you see Fluendo going in the future? And where do you see GStreamer going in the future?
I think... Well, for Fluendo, in terms of what we're going to work on a lot, I think you will see that we end up having, there will be a lot of announcement eventually of all these kind of embedded devices coming out.
Right.
Like set-top boxes and cell phones and other mobile devices, all using GStreamer.
Yeah.
And in some sense, a lot of it has been announced that you've seen a lot of these mobile alliances coming out recently, and they say that, hey, okay, we're standardizing on GTK, we're standardizing on GStreamer and so on. And these things actually have come about because the company is actually internally looking really into this. So I think we will have quite a lot of business going into the embedded market. And in terms of the desktop, what we're doing there, of course, is we're pushing very hard on trying to create a quite sort of like a full application suite for people. So we're putting research into Totem, the media player.
Yeah.
And our hope is to help create a really, really good media player that supports everything and can support things also legally for companies.
Yeah.
We are working on PTV, which is an editor for video editing.
This is something I was going to ask you as well.
So
is
that's
that
where you need the encoders, isn't it?
It seems like the Linux desktop is screaming out for is a decent video editor, and obviously we've talked about PTV a lot in the past.
We have.
We've talked about Diva, which unfortunately has died a death, which is a real shame.
It has, but it means Mr. Herbert Hervey is now the man in the position to become video editor king on the free desktop.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, so we are working and actually pursuing various sort of contracts currently with a lot of people who are interested in having a good free video editor. So our current plan actually is that PTV will become a cross-platform video editor.
And are Fluendo actually funding that development of PTV?
Yes.
Right.
And would PTV be something that would compete with, oh shit, what's it called?
Final Cut Pro. Avid.
Well, Avid, yeah, Avid is what I was saying.
Avid! iMovie.
Not iMovie. Thank you, please. I was thinking Avid. I mean, like, professional broadcast quality stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, our goal is to first create a version of PTV that sort of is an iMovie competitor. Yeah. And then once we're there, we can sort of see if we want to try to split out the new version or try to make it even more.
Whether you have PTV Pro or whatever.
I think we should also just pimp this. I know that Edward's been really screaming out for developers, so go to pitiv.org and go and get involved. It's written in Python, and it uses GStreamer, so any old fucker can contribute.
Absolutely. What's happening with Eliza at the moment?
Is that the thing that speaks to you?
Yeah,
not that, Eliza.
Well, the mode in Emacs.
Why are you a spoon?
Yeah, so Eliza, which is our media center solution, we have actually recently added two more developers to that project. So we have now four developers working full-time on just pushing Eliza forward.
So do you think Fluendo are going to go into the applications industry? Like, are you going to make GStreamer applications?
Building things on top of GStreamer.
Yeah, well...
Thank you. That's enough of an answer.
we're seeing two ways to go here. Three major things we're going to do with Eliza. One A is it's open source, and we're going to provide it as a way for people to get something as an alternative to Windows Media Center. For people who put it on desktop or want to put together on system.
And people who decide they just don't like Myth TV for whatever reason, which already exists.
Due to not wanting to take a week off work to build it.
And we're also already talking with various companies who are interested in using Eliza as their GUI for their set-top box.
I thought Eliza and set-top boxes seem to go rather well together.
So we have people who are doing DVB boxes, for instance, who want a nice GUI to interface it, and that will be something you're doing to Eliza, and we are also still looking into actually making a hardware box ourselves that will be like a Fluendo-like thing using Eliza.
And absolutely the best thing about that, by some considerable distance, having just gone out and bought a hard disk recorder DVD thing, from Toshiba.
The remote hate freedom.
Well, I was going to say, why don't you get a Myth box?
Because he hates freedom, that's why.
Because
he's got a life.
I didn't want to take a week off work and spend three times as much money on it and then have it crash all the time like Jono's. I know.
Mine doesn't crash all the time.
Not anymore, it doesn't. It did for the first 6 months.
No, it didn't.
Every time we watch telly, you go, oh, just hang on, and then you see an Ubuntu desktop pop up and you type something into an X-term.
That's bullshit.
It's not bullshit.
It's bullshit.
Anyway, the thing I like about Eliza is that you can use a remote control with five buttons on it. Up, down, left, right, and go. Mm. And that's it, which would be really, really nice. Mm. Is that a kind of a deliberate decision to try and make it easier to use than everything else?
Yeah, I mean, we hire interface designers. We have also a full-time interface designer working on Eliza and creating the graphics and sort of trying to figure out how to do the GUI. I mean, we're not 100% happy with the current state of the interface. I mean, one thing you might have noticed if you tested Eliza is that if you have a huge song collection or a huge video collection,
Press right.
So we are currently playing with various concepts to try to sort of make it nicer to browse big collections. That's a sort of one of the hard nuts we're trying to crack at this.
Cool.
Good stuff. Thanks.
One other question.
Yeah.
You were using Windows and thought, I need something better than this, and you saw Linux and started using it, and then you looked at the state of the Linux desktop and thought, okay, I want to work with media, and both of those things turned out to be important. So what do you now think is important that we're not doing?
Yeah, I was thinking
What are you going to leave Fluendo to do next, the next big stage? Because it sounds like it might be a good idea, whatever you say,
step and
I'll stop doing it.
Well,
it's not step Buntu.
Honestly, I think we're still not there, actually, in terms of media. I think the importance of multimedia, and it is sort of like what you're seeing today with things like YouTube coming along, that like empowering end users to work with multimedia is sort of the thing I see as the next big thing. And I think the amount of people who are making videos or making songs and publishing themselves, not to make money, but just because they sort of enjoy and sharing and making these things. I think we are still in the very...
That's recreantview.org.
Shut up!
Yeah, I think we're still in the very early stages of that process. So I think the next big thing actually will be that we will have true mass adoption of trying to do these kind of things. Because I think people actually find it...
Multimedia creation rather than just multimedia consumption.
Yeah, well, I'd like...
Nicely put.
I mean, as projects like Creative Commons actually start building up a good database of content, I think more and more people find that, hey, I can actually do quite fun stuff by mixing and matching things together using these tools like PTV and Vid and so on.
Lessig's dream.
And if you were to, for example, look at maybe a BitTorrent site, you'd see that there's more open content on BitTorrent sites now. When I'm looking at BitTorrent sites for open content, I've noticed a number of new things like from like Jamendo and...
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Tremendo, yeah.
What were you doing on those sites?
Browsing.
Looking for open content from Magnitude. Yeah, yeah.
Just browsing porn. In the same way that, you know, when I'm looking at shopping sites, I don't buy everything I see.
Or indeed anything.
Shine. Exactly. Right, okay.
Thanks very much, Christian. Good to have you.
Yeah, nice being here.
No, it isn't. Don't fucking lie to us. You fucking hate being here.
Lying bastard. You haven't made any tea yet or anything?
Yeah, you fucking pikey.
Tea's a marketer.
Well, I mean, this is the most beautiful part of England, isn't it?
The British heartland.
Yeah, the wonderful world of Wolverhampton.
Mm. I like it.
EOS.
End of show.
Indeed. Can I, before we start, to my fucking fat ginger friends.
Fuck's sake.
There's a show on ITV in the UK called Rosemary and Thyme, which is a show about these two old women who are basically detectives, one of which is extremely good looking, Felicity Kendall, and one of which months for England, which is Pam Ferris, right, who isn't Pam Ayres.
Who I thought was Pam Ayres.
And I just said he fucking fancies the pants of Pam Ferris.
No, I didn't. No. I said I fancy Thyme rather than Rosemary, and I'd got them the wrong way round.
Well, there you go.
You fucking dirty old bastard.
Right, so just to be clear about
you
this.
You can't blame him for being a raisin lover.
The raisin lover?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
The reason
why... He's not a grape man anymore.
What? Superb.
The raisin lover.
It's true. What's pink and wrinkled and hangs out your pants? Your mum.
The reason why we had this conversation was I asked the rest of the guys when the show was not being recorded, who is the most embarrassing person that they fancy? One of which Axe said was it?
Fluella Benjamin.
I like Jenny Bond. Aid thought, fucking, what's the name?
Philippa Forrester.
Who is, everyone thinks he's gorgeous. And who was you that...
I don't remember.
He preferred not to say, I think.
Who was it that you said? Mr. Christian Scheller said someone particularly disgusting.
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton! And Matt just said his mum.
I can't think of anyone, actually. I'm so tired at the moment.
Should we read some emails?
So people, send in who's the most embarrassing person that you fancy.
Simon sent something in.
Who?
An email. Simon Elliott. Who?
Okay.
And the subject is cunt horn.
Oh, hang on.
The sound of the cunt horn is hilarious. So, cunt! I love Log Radio, Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
Usual wit and intelligence from our community.
thank you, Simon. Yes,
which way is it going to be this time?
Shall I go next?
You go next.
I can go next.
That way.
A bloke called Leonard Ritter writes in.
What? He loves it up there.
Excuse me, for God's sake. Leonard Nimoy. He says, hi, I'm a regular...
My name's Leonard Ritter, I love it up the...
Thank you.
Shelbyville.
I'm a regular follower of your show, and thus it didn't escape my attention.
I used to be a regular follower of your show.
Yeah. And now, fuck you and all pagan Lutherans. And thus it didn't escape my attention that you briefly mentioned another application which had free sound support along with Jacosha. The app you were probably talking about is Mine, Aldrin, available at aldrin.sf.net.
Cool.
It's a Buzz-style tracker application. Presumably it's called Aldrin because...
Well, Buzz, attachment for the PlayStation.
I was assuming it was called Aldrin because it's the second one that no one can remember.
Buzz Aldrin. Oh, okay.
But yes, looking forward to more Log Radio Madness, yours truly. So, Cole, if you're interested in a Buzz-style tracker application, then aldrin.sf.net is the way forward.
Thanks, Leonard Ritter.
Live long and prosper.
An email from Milan Babuskov.
Hey.
What a cool name, eh? Milan Babuskov. We don't get many cool names, as demonstrated by Mr. Ritter. Hello! First of all, let me tell you that Lug Radio is a great show. I first heard of it on the Linux Link Tech Show when Jono was a guest on their show, and I like Lug Radio much better.
So we go on other people's shows, and we shill Lug Radio.
We're willing to do interviews on any of our competitors' shows and tell you that.
What do we do? Want to talk about Lug Radio and say how we're better.
Yes. I'm listening back to all the shows from episode one, and I'm currently somewhere in season three.
Oh, I wouldn't do that
four,
if I was you.
As I write this, yeah, just avoid kind of season one.
Yeah, season one was a mistake.
It was, yes. The reason I write is that I came across this comic, and it reminded me of Everybody Loves Eric Raymond, you talk about so much. If you, by chance, know about it already, just ignore this. And it is it's at adequacy.org.
All right.
I'm not going to provide the URL, because it's ridiculous. But yeah, go to adequacy.org/story/2002.1.17.21116. Anyway. Anyway, this show is great. I even bought the headphone so I can turn it up without my wife complaining.
Brilliant!
Keep up the good stuff. And in his, just a slight pimp for him, he says in his signature to go to javagames.sourceforge.net.
And what is it, Magnus Babushka?
It's Milan Babushkov.
All right.
Magnus Babushka.
Cool name. Christian Frederick Kaloga Shala. Speak on with an email.
Well,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I remember. What was
I
the...
I might have pronounced Kaloga wrong.
Kaloga.
No, Kaloga is pretty correct.
Is that like Goldschlager? No.
No, it's like Jägermeister.
Really expensive Liverpudlian.
Representing the Spanish constituency, I have a mail from Pablo Contreras.
Hola!
And
oh, Contreras.
He's actually asking, I've been trying to download episode 72. when I finally click on the link that says compatibility MP3 format,
oh, no.
I get absolutely nothing.
This is the CBR link, isn't it?
You are not compatible with our show. You yeah. fucking lose. Right,
how come is
yeah,
that?
Just to explain, we had a few reports of people unable to play the MP3s that we were providing.
Which,
on their
may I just
MP3
say,
players.
Encoded using LAME. So,
yeah.
What do you want?
So we said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do a compatibility MP3 where we turned off all the flashy options and made it CBR and a low bit rate and
that's
everything.
Constant bit ratio.
Yeah, exactly. And it made it about twice as big as everything else. And then we looked at the number of people who downloaded it, and it was basically nobody. So we stopped doing it again. But I've never got around to telling the lugradio.org website that we don't do the compatibility MP3 anymore.
And when nobody, we literally mean like one or two downloads per episode. Yeah.
And this is coming from a man who's always said to me, no Earl should die on the internet.
I'm not going to kill the URLs. Absolutely not.
It doesn't fucking work, does it?
It works fine. The URL doesn't go 404 or anything. It takes you to the page which says download it from our mirrors and doesn't list any mirrors.
Mm. Which is basically broken.
Personally, I think the message of Pablo and everybody else with this problem is you said Switch to Warbis a long time ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good man. Matthew?
Right, hi.
Matthew P.
That's me. That's me, Matthew Ravel. We've got an email from Sean Cohen here. He starts email, knobheads. regarding your conversation.
Must be talking to you three.
Four. Regarding your conversation in the last episode covering web services, Gmail, Google Write, etc., and open source, you all constantly kept saying if it were open source this and if it were open source that. Of course, you all seem to be missing the point entirely. Google Write could very well, and probably does, run on a great deal of open source and even GPL version 3 code. Hang on, shut up, I'm talking. The entire point is that we have absolutely no bollocking idea what goes on behind the scenes. Your point, Mr. H.
I think we did make a point that it's probably running on open source software in the back end of the service.
And is the code available for that, for those applications?
Well, what he says is...
No, they're not.
What he says is a web service running on open source code is under zero obligation to release any code if they're not distributing binaries.
I think we mentioned that as well, didn't we?
As not a single one of you pointed this out, I am hereby christening you all knobheads of the week.
That's an outrageous lie. We talked about GPL version 3 and how it's exactly going to kill this, and we've talked about the Afro GPL more than once in the past, which again is exactly designed to be the GPL but applied to basically counting
hair.
Being a web service as a distribution.
And with
Afro, not Afro.
And we've also talked about whether the Free Software Foundation's definition of what freedom means is what everybody else thinks what freedom means, because a lot of people think that web applications should provide the source code.
It is a point that does need to be said more, and thank you for writing in about it, there are lots of web services which aren't free software, or might be free software, but we don't know.
And there should be more of a focus on free software being provided in web services. Like today, a good example of this, right?
Zimbra.
Slayer is getting fucking hammered right now.
Slayer is
our
machine
server.
Which runs lugradio.org and cryogenics.org.
My photo gallery seems to be getting hammered, and I want to move the photos away from that onto another site. And I looked around, and Aqua's helped me look today, for a site that provides basically Flickr, but with free software.
Mugshot.
And I haven't seen anything that provides
that's not quite the case. What you want is you want a site which does what Flickr does,
yes.
runs on free software, and you've got a reasonably, you can be reasonably confident that it's still going to be that's there the 12 killer. Months from now.
And I couldn't find anything.
And I couldn't find anything either.
So I ended up with Flickr, and and I'd like to see something like that.
As an example, I don't know about the Flickr people, but Smug Mug, who are one of their competitors, Flickr are miles ahead, but Smug Mug are doing reasonably well. They're very much like Flickr. They charge for the service, that kind of thing. They don't do free accounts like Flickr does. But they use a lot of open source software, and they're very clear about that. And they've said quite a few times, we'd like to give back to the open source community. We'd like to contribute code. The stuff that we use on the back end, we do hack on. We do send our changes back. We'd like to maybe, as we get more money together, pay people who work on those open source projects because they make our commercial product, our proprietary product, Smug Mug, better. But they're not actually releasing the code for Smug Mug itself, and it doesn't appear that they have any intention of doing
but
so.
But they are still contributing in a way.
They are helping.
Which is good.
They are conscious of the fact that they're using open source software and they want to contribute back to the community.
I wonder if Yahoo do that. Yahoo must contribute back to the open source community.
I certainly believe they do so, and they have open source some code themselves. The Yahoo user interface library is BSD licensed.
Just as a side point, I was amazed how cheap Flickr is for the unlimited bandwidth.
$20 a year?
It's like $25 a year, which is fuck all.
$25 a year. Smug Mug is
$40 a year. And there are free accounts if you're not going to be uploading that many pictures a month.
Yes.
And it's quite a few you can upload monthly. But anyway.
Anyway, we continue. Who's next?
Fred writes in. He says.
Fred. Just Fred.
Yeah. Fred Good.
He has no surname?
He was too sexy for his shirt, apparently. Anyway, first off, you guys really need to shut the fuck up.
listeners.
Okay, thank you very much, and goodbye.
It's got a point.
If it wasn't hard enough to understand your accents, your shouting really makes it impossible. I'm looking at two people here in particular.
Matt and Christian.
Can't blame Shalavis, he's not normally here.
When I can
it's
understand...
It's Adam Sweet's fault, all his fault.
The bastard.
Anyway, when I can understand you, I find your conversations to be educational and entertaining. So thanks for the effort and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Fred.
You do pretty well for being canonical whores.
Hey, Fred. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. No one's a canonical whore.
I don't know what yours. You are a canonical whore.
No.
Me and Aid aren't.
Yeah. No. Just working for Canonical doesn't make you a canonical whore.
No.
By definition.
I didn't say that because you work for Canonical, you're a canonical whore. I said, you're a canonical whore. Oh, you choose to be a canonical whore.
Anyway, you wanted to work for Canonical. Moving on.
Not really.
Yeah, right. Beard. That's what another HR department says.
on the other hand, it is what I said to the launchpad team. So, web applications. An email from Will Thompson. He says, in an unusual turn of events, Aki's right. Fuck you.
I like this guy.
And the rest of you are massively wrong about web applications.
I don't like him anymore.
You all agree. Bill Thompson's son.
You all agreed that the whole point of a web application is that it works everywhere without having to install anything, right? If that's the case, then locking out mobile phones and all the other wonderful toys that can access the global web renders them worthless.
Not entirely convinced.
I agree with him.
No, he's
fuck you all, you're all wrong. Plus, he also thinks that there should be a Haskell talker like Radio Live. So
that's him. He's been yabbering on about that one, Haskell.
Right.
Yeah.
We definitely need a Haskell talker.
If someone wants to step forward and want to talk about Haskell, we'll happily.
Have we got a room that's got room for like one chair?
Yeah. I think it'll be a well-attended talk that if it's done by the right person, could be quite fun as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it's had a rigorous booting on the radio.
Someone stand up and volunteer to talk about Haskell like Radio Live.
Well, I mean, there's only one guy hacking Haskell, so you should probably try to get that guy.
Jeff Haskell.
We don't really care.
More on LaGradio Live later anyway.
Haskell just is somebody's surname.
Well, the Haskell talk will be right after Cobalt talk, right?
They'll be after Logo.
Mr. Bacon.
No, they'll be at the same time as one another in the same phone box.
Jeff Moore sends us an email.
What is he good for?
Absolutely fuck all.
Fuck all.
Well, writing emails for the sounds of it. What?
Sorry.
He's got a law.
Models. That was Gordon Moore.
Isn't he a gopher? Anyway.
No. That was Gordon the gopher.
I used to love that show.
Clue was in the question there, really, wasn't it?
Jeff Moore. What is he good for? Making laws. Models of open source projects. I'm assuming he doesn't mean small plastic models.
Or size zero models.
Hi, everyone. I love the show. Better than any other Linux podcast. I should stop there, really.
Yeah.
I've been listening for about a year, and I'm still mystified by all the references to beards and chins. Didn't he send this email in last time?
Someone sent an email asking us to explain. So that's now twice we've explained this stuff somewhere in the back catalogue.
He says, I'm curious, though, about what seems to be a fascination among the group with the fact that at least one of you is bald.
he's not bald anymore, by the way.
He isn't.
I will be soon.
He has got a full head of hair. Full and luxuriant head of hair.
Yes, let me just sweep it out of my eyes.
Age, it looks so bouncy and manageable.
You look like Nat Friedman.
I don't take two bottles into the shower. I just shave and go.
Not you, you're Duncan Goodhue.
Yeah. Shaves his pathetic penis.
Go on.
Anyway, it looks like an elephant.
Why don't you shave your penis?
Don't knock it till you try. I've not shaved my penis, I just want to clarify. Anyway, he says, I'm also learning a lot about Linux.
Well, good.
I'm a technology coordinator for schools in the US, and I'm very interested in open source software. Schools teach students something very important about ethics and the development of information.
Cool.
Schools teach students something very important about ethics.
Maybe you should go.
And the development of information simply by using open source software and participating as much as they can in open source communities.
Wise words.
It is wise words. He says it's the perfect object lesson for information literacy in the 21st century. I've been banging on this for fucking ages. Because I've been thinking about this. One thing that schools always miss out on is, it's always about tick boxes, about this, does this software, open source software, compare to proprietary software? Instead of all of the great community and ethical side of things that, you know, we all treasure in the open source community. Anyway, he says, I'm wondering if the open source model might be useful to schools in other ways. Imagine a school using an open source model to build and maintain, say, a curriculum document. I'm more of a user than a programmer, so I'm only familiar with the basics of how open source projects are organized. Can you recommend any literature on the community and leadership of open source projects, how to start one, what works, what doesn't work, etc.?
So you turned the school curriculum into bar camp. That'd be interesting.
I think it'd be interesting. One person you might want to
to actually answer the question.
Just speaking from the Ubuntu side, one person you might want to speak to is a guy called Richard Weideman, who's works at Canonical on the Ubuntu on the education side of Ubuntu, and he's very similar thinking, this kind of stuff. So he's called Rich Ed on IRC. You might want to talk to him because he's certainly interested in this kind of approach as well. So and obviously there's going to be people for Fedora and other distros. And so if anyone has an answer to Jeff's question, send us an email in and we'll respond.
We will, absolutely.
Carl Goldschlager.
Monsieur Goldschlager.
Oui. So, I have an email here from Bruno Bord. And this is the shortest email on my list.
Like short emails.
Yeah. Dear gents, that's you guys.
Is it?
On an unrelated note, I'm part of the campaign Jeff Waugh for Lug Radio Live. If you could urge him to be here for Lug Radio Live, I think it could be great.
Should we get Sparks on as well?
And if you can talk, that would be awesome.
But didn't we just agree earlier that it's like past now? We've just passed it, yeah?
Okay, now
it's
we have.
Still last week.
Okay, now we have to urge him, Jeff, come to LRL.
Yeah.
We've actually asked Jeff in the past.
We have done.
I spoke to Bruno about this.
And he always says, not unreasonably, I'd love to come, but I live 25,000 miles away from the venue.
And I
which
think
means that he's gone all the way around the world twice.
it's a long way to Australia.
Particularly harsh dig there, Mr. About.
Mr. Bacon, what did Bruno also say about your coat, which is on eBay?
That he's a fuck thieving boy.
That he might find all four of your lost phones in it.
Yes. Yes.
All of your lost phones in the pocket. So, yeah, Jeff, if you want to come to Lug Radio Live, drop us a line.
Yes. One thing I said to Bruno is I can imagine it's going to be even more difficult for Jeff now because he's doing his own business and he's a consultant and everything. So, our hopes aren't high, but if Jeff can make it, you're more than welcome to come and speak. But more on Lug Radio Live later.
John Bacon will be there, who's basically styling himself as a new Jeff Waugh, so there will be an option there.
Moving on.
Also not enough respect.
Well, he's fat and bearded, so
And he's wearing ridiculous headphones as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you say, hello, freedom lovers?
I can.
That's it, you're done.
I can not going to.
I'm also not going to repeat it every 10 seconds at Lug Radio Live.
Oh,
regular.
I'm jesting.
Get the dig in to Jeff Waugh. What jeffing. Is he good for?
I'm jeffing.
Matthew P.
Is that like dogging?
No, that's...
It's where you meet up at a conference and shag people you don't know.
It's where you go to a field and watch Jeff Waugh have sex in a car. Right.
Jeffing. Maybe it's generic to Jeffs. Any Jeff.
Effing and Jeffing.
Right.
Mind off with Jeff Hurst.
Oh, dear.
My uncle is his accountant. Christopher Eamon.
Is he called Jeff?
No, it's called Colin.
Thanks. So Christopher Yeamon writes in again.
Would
you fuck off?
Regular correspondent.
I'm joking.
Don't slag
I'm joking. Yeamon. Has Yeamon been to LRL?
He lives in New York.
Does he? No fucking
New York. He's from Trinidad originally, though.
Right. And Tobago?
Well, it's one country, legally.
Okay.
Just wanted to say that the web applications discussion was really good.
Thanks,
one of, if not the best you've ever had.
Of course, said, thanks, Jeff.
You mentioned that there aren't any successful open source websites out there.
Fucking too bad.
But what about Wikipedia?
And LiveJournal.
The software on which it runs is open source. And the server and service to natural content is licensed under an OS license.
Yep, no, fair play.
Thanks. Garrett reminded us at SkyCon that LiveJournal
would be another good example of this. I didn't think of, yeah.
Does he have a LiveJournal account?
Well, he's not 14 and suicidal as well.
That's almost as bad as having a fucking MySpace, isn't it?
He's pale, though, isn't he?
Oh, hang on.
He is. He needs fattening up.
He's not painting his nails black.
He's just hammering them instead.
Ha! I remember thinking, because, like, within our little metal community, there was always a joke that, like, new metal people always sort of say, feel my pain.
Mm.
And I went to livejournal.com/user/feel my pain, and there was a fucking account there. Oh, dear.
Were they Korn fans? Cold Chamber
wouldn't
fans?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, fucking. Angsty 14-year-old.
Emo people.
Emo, God.
Emo. Rod and Emo.
I'd never have a MySpace account, personally.
Rod Hull and Emo.
It's bands that generally play their gigs on a fucking roof, fitting satellite TV. Emo on lead guitar.
There's like four people listening to this who are going to get a joke.
Dear folk, Scale was awesome. I had the pleasure of introducing Jono during his talk on Herdy Cats, which was badass.
Way!
However,
is that good or bad?
I think it's American for good.
Oh, okay. I don't really understand American.
Those crazy foreigners.
He said something about popping a cap in my ass at the end of it.
Really? I don't think it was a cap. Anyway, but this email is not to talk. It's not to talk about that, but to remind you that Jono is a cock.
Is that a slang of some kind?
I think that's, again, American.
During a 10 PM server raffle, Dave Neary of Open Wengo was sleeping in a chair. And Jono, the cock, decided to take an O'Reilly Python book, a fucking O'Reilly Python book, and throw it at the back of Dave Neary's head. As you can imagine, this must have hurt, but Jono doesn't care because he's a cock. All in all, a great show. Hope to see you guys in Southern California.
Can I clarify this, okay? Dave Neary,
there is no way you can clarify this.
I'm not entirely to blame.
With a book from 10 feet away.
Dave Neary was asleep, right? I was sat next to Ted Hager and Jeremy Garcia from Linux Questions, and Dave Neary was asleep. Completely fucking out to the world.
So you thought the lamp of book ran about.
There was a raffle going on, right? And Ted Hager just won some books, and one of which was this tiny little Python book, which wasn't an O'Reilly book, incidentally. That was flagrant misrepresentation. And
Right, because if I get smacked on the back of the head with a book when I'm asleep, I care who the publisher was.
It was the Python Bible. And I pointed Neary being out asleep to Ted Hager, and I think Ted Hager said to me, you should wake him up by throwing something at him. I said, have you got anything?
Oh, Ted, you need to write in and confirm this.
I might be wrong. And I said to Ted, what should I throw at him? And Ted unveiled this Python book. So I kind of threw it, and I have to admit, it wasn't an underarm thing, it was kind of an overarm kind of jobby. It hit Neary right in the back of the neck.
And paralysed him.
And he was like, completely like, what the fuck's going on?
Poor soul. In the Give Jono a Shoeing by Email thing, the Magnificent...
It's not a regular segment!
The Magnificent Patrick Finch and his Orchestra and Chorus write in.
And say,
Jimmy Hill was not, as Jono said in The Importance of Being Critical, a footballer in the 1980s, which he wasn't. I was going to mention it, but we moved on. Banana-Faced Hill was a footballer in the 1950s. Football manager in the 1960s and football TV presenter and pundit in the 70s, 80s and early 90s.
But his chin still remained long.
I believe that it was his career as famously vacuous pundit which saw the chin-rubbing windbag become associated with talking bollocks. Not so mysterious. Thanks for the show.
God.
See you at LRL,
we all love Patrick Finch. He's a comedy writing.
We do. He's a comedy legend. Thank you, Pat.
Windbag.
Matthew McDonald Wallace, I'll take a turn.
Take a turn? Just have a shit on the floor, why don't you?
That was a dig there.
there, I believe, from Tiny Ravel.
He says, that was one of the funniest non-offensive acts of bullying I've ever heard. Matthew McDonald Wallace. One of the many great reasons why I keep listening to you all. As you got such a good segment of the show based purely on my name, I reckon that must be worth a free ticket to Lug Radio Live or at least a discount. So we've got the first email here asking for a concession.
Yes, you can have
not
a concession.
Not so old McDonald Wallace, not on my farm, and my dog's not called Gromit.
We never take the piss out of people's names, though.
Yep, never happens.
It's such a rarity.
Yeah, we do.
Let's don't go there, you.
Oh,
what's this?
Nothing.
No, please expand.
But
no,
we apologise for any offence caused.
Yep.
So does he get his free ticket?
Matthew Mabamba Shabamba for Bramble, whatever his name is. Yes,
Matthew,
you can
old
have a concession.
McDonald's farm.
He doesn't want a concession,
Robert.
He wants a free ticket.
Old McDonald had a farm, EIEO, and on that farm.
If he wants a free ticket, he's welcome to submit a talk, and if we pick it, then you get him.
Move abroad.
Or move abroad and then travel internationally to get to the venue.
McDonald's?
To come from Scotland, then, really.
You get a concession.
No.
Yeah, you get a concession.
Scotland's part of the United Kingdom.
Registrations are not yet
Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Yeah. More on Lug Radio Live.
Now.
Later.
Now.
Oh, now.
Oh, we got some more emails.
Well, I've got an email, but it's...
It out.
It's bollocks, to be honest.
Is it the long one?
And here's a bollocks email from...
Dan Allen! Forward! It's a forwarded email, so he can't be bothered sending us a
Didn't even write his own one.
Forward from his mum.
You gave me a biscuit.
Mrs. Allen writes, Lynn Spires, new partnership with Canonical and Ubuntu. I sure hope you talk about this topic in your next show. Did we talk about it in the last show? No, that was SkyCon. This one is pretty damn major. Up to this point, Linux users have had a choice to ignore that click and run existed. Now it is in front and centre in the Ubuntu limelight. I personally think it's a good thing, but all might not agree. I know there's been varied discussion on this.
You can still ignore it.
We can maybe talk about it in the future if we're interested, but we're probably not.
Well, who needs it if we can go and get our codex from
Mr. Schellery.
Yeah.
Marketing genius.
Anyone who wants proprietary software that isn't a multimedia codec.
Ah, fuck it.
Yes. Should we talk about Lug Radio Live?
Yeah.
At some point I need to fit in a shoe in about Ack writing his own Wikipedia page.
only briefly talk about Lug Radio Live, I think, because we have hammered the point a bit and we still have an open registration.
But I guess we can talk a lot about the Wikipedia page then.
Nah, thank you.
Yeah, all the more time to talk about that then.
When I first discovered that someone had written a Wikipedia page about me, Ack was very vocal in giving me a beating about saying, oh, I bet you've written it, and it was a constant source of amusement. And Ack wrote his own fucking Wikipedia page.
Which actually is against the terms and conditions of Wikipedia.
Against the terms and conditions, and when queried about this the last time, he fucking denied it, and...
What's the name of the author who penned the first version?
Query you so?
Ooh!
How could that be?
For God's sake, for about the 90th fucking time of explanation, it was pointed out to me the terms and conditions thing after I did it, which I didn't realise it was a problem.
So why did you deny that you'd written it the last time you
did not deny that I'd written it!
Yes, you fucking did,
no,
you liar.
I didn't!
You massive egotistical person,
well,
by
possibly
the way.
That, I agree with you, but I didn't deny it!
Yes, you did!
No, I didn't!
Yes, you did!
Which is a
megastar.
No,
that's
no,
not
no, like Radio Live.
You can dance as much as you like while you say
yes,
it!
Yes, you did!
Anyway!
Lug Radio Live!
Yes, you
did! Submit some papers!
You've got some good accommodation news for Lug Radio Live. If you want to stay...
We have a hotel in Wolverhampton now.
Well, we've got several. If you want to stay for $13.50 a night plus VAT...
$13.50?
Then you need to get a group of 25 of you together and book in at the university.
A harem.
The form will be on the Lug Radio Live website by the time you see this.
Why do you need to talk to university to stay at John's place?
Do you only get one bed?
What, between 25
or 13.50 a night?
And five hoes.
But yeah, get yourself organised sales on the forum.
I was going to say, get to lugradio.org/forums.
Yeah. Get 24
no,
hours.
Alternatively, forums.lugradio.org,
which is where it actually is, you're quite right.
You want to spend less time writing your own Wikipedia page than so much in the forums.
Thank you, yes. Yes, forums.lugradio.org.
Chris DeBona, Aaron Saigo, Matthew Garrett, Ted Hager.
Hey, guys.
Michael Sparks.
Simon Willison.
Simon Willison. Jervis Markham.
Jervis Markham, yes. If you look at lugradio.org/live/2007/speakers...
These are many of the people that will be there.
Yes. We are getting more and more speakers, and we are updating the speakers page as we go along. The other thing I ought to say is we've had a lot of people write in with suggestions for lightning talks.
Yep.
And We haven't got back to you to say yay or nay yet, but we will be doing so probably by the end of March.
Yeah,
thank you very much to all those people for submitting your talks, and we are very interested in pretty much all of them.
We've had a fantastic array of talks, and we want more, so
keep sending them in.
Keep sending them in.
Keep sending them in.
That was very good. Non-bold friend.
We want to hear lots more lightning talks that people want to do, lots more main stage talks that people want to do.
Yeah.
So if you want to do a talk, send us your name, what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
Only to be a brief description.
And €50.
Cool things that you want to do in the exhibition area as well.
Yes, that's the next thing.
If you're an exhibitionist, get your cock out in our area.
Nice. What do we want for the exhibition?
I just described it.
A range of cocks.
Basically, we want something a little bit different this year. People who are going to have very interactive events, basically. So if you want to do a circus show featuring open source software, go for it.
So not just necessarily selling a load of
mugs.
Yeah. I was going to say mugs, but... Yeah.
Or indeed just showing people your product in a kind of, here's a laptop screen, I'll show you. We're looking for more interactive demos and people doing exciting things.
The idea in some ways was O'Reilly's Make magazine, which has featured prominently in the past.
Yes. On makescene.com.
They have the Makers Fair where they basically, it's like they show and tell the stuff that they're doing, but they also have like events and things going on there, which are quite interesting. We were thinking about the similar sort of thing. It'd be nice for people to come and not only demo stuff, but preferably not some kind of horrific STD. come along and make use of the space so it's a really interesting exhibition instead of just a bunch of stands. I mean, people are going to come along and just have stands, and that's fine. Everyone's, of course, welcome, but we'd really want to make it something special this year. And,
I also have a special request to Red Hat if they appear this year, that they have a t-shirt in a different size and extra, 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 extra large.
I agree.
Because the t-shirt last year, I was very happy for it, but still, when it reaches me to knees, I look kind of funny, so I would like it.
To be honest with you, I think it'd be fine.
I also request that Red Hat don't leave a load of FUDCON bracelets this year as well.
Why not?
Oh, the bastards, did they?
Yeah, there was just a huge pile of FUDCON
what's wrong with that?
Bracelets on the table.
Fedora User and Developer Conference?
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But
shill it at someone else's bloody event.
No, the fact was that they were the entrance bracelets from an event that had happened. They were just trash, basically.
Oh.
We like Red Hat because they always
come
along and do lots of cool stuff at LaGrange
Life.
Very
big fans of Red Hat.
And hopefully the regular
food. And
hopefully the regular chaps are going to be there this year.
And to some extent, I'll be honest with you, the fact that Eric Raymond has now decided to leave Fedora and move to Ubuntu encourages me more to think about Fedora instead of Ubuntu as my desktop.
Moving on.
Silence
in the Lug Radio studio!
Is there anything else we want to bring up about Lug Radio Live, apart from
Bile.
Keep sending in your papers?
Well, we will have the registrations open soon, we're going to leave that for a little bit longer.
Just to clarify as well in terms of the venue, one thing that's nice about the Lighthouse where we're doing it is it's an independent cinema, so the venue's very cool, and it's literally just down the road from the train station as well, so it's very, very convenient if you just want to hop in a train. Wolverhampton's very well connected in the UK, so you can get here from pretty much anywhere. So there's direct trains from London, there's direct trains from
and indeed
Birmingham,
we have travel instructions at lugradio.org/live.
Yes, so it's going to be an incredible event. Again, as Zach says, send in your paper submissions because we really want to have a good and varied range of talks. And we're also interested in having amusing talks. I mean, Bruno did a fantastically amusing talk last year.
He's doing another one this year, isn't he?
He is. Well, he's talking about he's talking about doing a quiz.
Hey.
And Bruno's the man for the job, so...
He is, absolutely.
So,
get in touch with us.
So it's lugradio.org/live. Go there and find out more. Shall we wrap it up then?
Been an interesting show with the old Shaller.
Yes.
Thank
you very much, Christiania.
Have you enjoyed yourself, Mr. Shaller?
I'll be back in 14 days for next show.
Oh, excellent. You heard it here first.
I don't think you will, actually.
No, you're not going to be involved. We're now doing it at Shaller's place.
Yeah, easy.
Fucking hell. My monopoly on recording the show is now over.
We're going to stream the fucker.
We've always had the problem that we couldn't record it anywhere else because you've got all the recording gear, but he works for Fluendo, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, and we have this new application called Decoder, and thanks to it, we don't need Cubase and John.
And also, he lives in Barcelona and not fucking...
rather than Wolverhampton, the fucking nadir of the universe.
Incidentally, Ravel, you live in Wolverhampton.
I like Wolverhampton, I just don't like this bit.
No, good for you, I think that's a shit
on. I just don't like this bit.
My house.
No, this room.
This room, yeah.
This room's,
Anyway, yes, thank you very much, Christian.
Mr. Scheller, do you think Thomas van der Schnitzel's going to come and do a talk at Lug Radio Live?
I've been trying to encourage him, and I think he's... on the move towards sending in a
picture. Yes, you know it makes sense.
Because he did a really...
He's on our list of people we want to invite on our secret wiki, isn't he?
We shouldn't have secret
He wikis.
Did a really good talk at LCA on FluMotion, and it'd be good to get him along.
FluMotion rocked it.
I'll make sure to try to push him even harder when I get back to Barcelona.
Yeah, you know it makes
sense.
Whatever
you need to do.
Yeah.
The other thing, just tiny bit, is boff sessions. We want to have lots of boff sessions. They were really popular last year. So if you've got a project such as, I think we've got one for, there's an OpenSUSE one, there's going to be a Ubuntu UK one, there's going to be a Jacosha one, a few other bits and pieces. If you're interested in this, I know there's going to be a lug.org.uk one again. If you want to get together with people and talk about something, just let us know.
Yeah.
And just send an email to show@lugradio.org or ping one of us.
We'll set aside a space for you. And this year we promise not to do it at the back of the room where the main stage is.
We've also spoken about light bulb talks where people get up for 5 minutes on the day. Just get up, do something, and that's it.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to have that as well.
That we are going to do at some point.
So it's going to be an incredible event. Pencil in the 7th and 8th of July.
Of July,
2007.
In your diary, in Wolverhampton.
Don't pencil it. Invite it in big, thick, black marker.
Or possibly add it to your fucking calendar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Google calendar.
Well, good night, everyone. It's been great.
I'm aroused.
I think Shella is as
well. I'm going to have one off the wrist in a second.
You said it tonight, Shella?
I don't believe we're going to do that.
He is.
I'm ready for everything.
Lucky boy.
Wow.
When you're in the heartland, you have to do something.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Involving a sheep, the edge of a cliff, and wellies.
Well.
And gloves made out of Velcro.
It's been wonderful. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank my parents.
And good night.
Let's record the intro.